Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Javier, how you feeling about Tony Khan's big announcement, an event named Forbidden Door, which I think is just trolling me, is coming to the United Center in Chicago the last weekend of June. It was a interesting moment with the press, the owner, President Lee Booker, Tony Khan, and the president of New Japan shaking hands, only to be mysteriously and magically interrupted on the big screen by Adam Cole. Tony Khan should fire someone for that. How did that happen? And then after that, Jay White comes out and cuts a promo, which was kind of less of a crowd response than I thought, considering how many people pop for New Japan. It's kind of a weird crowd tonight in Pittsburgh in terms of their responses to things being a little different than either other cities or what I expected. At least that was my take. But yeah, what do you think of this? I know it was kind of the top pick of what the announcement was going to be. I don't know if it was a huge surprise for a lot of people, but how did you react?
Well, I mean, I've been kind of expecting this for about 2 years now. I felt it was going to come like 2 years ago, but then when the pandemic hit, I think it put the kibosh on a lot of that stuff, because there were a lot of storylines like subtly being created through social media and other spots with wrestlers that were from New Japan talking about wrestlers in AEW and vice versa. But then that, obviously the pandemic slowed that down. So it looks like it's finally time to get this thing going. And, I'm excited. Although after the third night of Wrestle Kingdom, there was a crossover. It was a crossover show with Noah. You know, my excitement is tempered, 'cause it could just end up being a bunch of tag team matches. Bullet Club versus, that sort of thing, like different, groups together. So I'm a little bit tempered in that. I'm hoping that by then we have something on Kenny Omega, because I kind of like, he's kind of like a linchpin between the two of them. Really high top guy in New Japan, top guy in AEW. I would hope that he's involved. I'm excited, but a little bit tempered from where I would have been like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm real curious what ticket sales are. Did they announce an on sale date? I got a press release during the show. I didn't have a chance to read it yet.
I didn't see an on sale date. I just saw the that's going to be on the 26th, I think.
Yep. So I just opened the press release that AEW sent us. By the way, when WWE sends us press releases, the subject line says what the press release is about, and this is very AEW of AEW. Their subject line in an AEW press release about Forbidden Door, the subject line is press release. Like, it's quite literal, but let's step it up a little bit here. I mean, you could let the media know we're used to getting press releases. That is not the most tempting hook to open it. It's not a big deal, but it is a little, I don't know, minor league.
I've been on their website. I mean, they could up that game. It cannot possibly be so expensive to not, do something,
They have the worst pro wrestling website of any company with a budget over $400 annually. I know Tony Khan likes the social media, but that is a very underutilized. I mean, people still go to websites to find out about if I want to buy a ticket to my local sports team. I kind of want to look at the schedule. I go to the local thing. If I have I don't know. I mean, I could give a bunch of examples. People still go to websites, AEW. You can not have to. I don't want to have to search the Twitter feed if I'm an AEW fan to find out key information about what's coming up. You can't find out consistently anything about AEW. You have to go to their Twitter feed and spend 10 minutes scrolling to try to find their graphic that they tweeted. So, yeah, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I just
chuckled. I mean, just make it an aggregator of what people are tweeting.
That would be that. Yeah. There are so many suggestions I have for their website. Impact Wrestling blows them away. Anyway, I don't want to. That's a sidebar book. Come on, geez, wow. So May 6th is the on sale date. I am really curious what ticket sales are like and if they announce matches ahead of time or if they're going to experiment and see if just, you know, the novelty of this. Does it? Chicago's kind of become like a capital of the wrestling world again. It had some big events over the years. Jim Crockett Promotions, went there. WCW held Chi-Town Heat. Was Chi-Town Heat or Chi-Town Rumble? There, I attended that back in, was it 89? There's a history in AEW sort of in a way picks up on the WCW history in certain ways because WWE has their history. From All Out, and the CM Punk United Center event. Yeah, Chicago's a good place to be if you're a big wrestling fan and you like the AEW product especially.
Yeah, I sent the Eric Carolla DM about that. So.
Yes.
lucky bastard. Let's just put it that way.
Also, by the way, the press release has a quote from the New Japan president. And it says, as we have done for more than 50 years, the power of pro wrestling can energize people by fulfilling their dreams. You know, which is fine. It's a quote. But they hyphenated pro wrestling. And that means you're for pro wrestling. Like, I'm pro abortion rights. You know, like, there's no dash in pro wrestling. Like, there never has been. Who's proofreading these things? It's just little stuff like that. Come on, people. It's like spelling Ric Flair's name wrong in a press release. Like, don't spell pro wrestling wrong in a press release. There's no dash in it. Anyway, like I said, people who think I pick on AEW are really going to think I'm being petty today. But, you know, from a media guy, getting a press release that says press release, I mean, I'm still not quite over that yet. this could be really cool. But like you said, it might not be really cool. Like, it might be just a novelty. You know, I mean, they're going to sell out of the tickets. People are going to drive in.
Yeah.
Any chance people have who are New Japan fans to see New Japan wrestlers in person. You're going to get a bunch of out-of-state people, out-of-country people, people drive down from Canada. So they're going to have that. I'm curious how much, if this sort of becomes like Battle of the Belts, if AEW doesn't do a ton with it, and they just sort of, it's just like the side thing and Excalibur speed talks his way through plugging it a couple times and that's about it. Or if we're actually going to see like 2 months of consistent parallel hype for this and also their next pay-per-view and then, you know, everything else they have going on. I mean, they have a lot going on and this is a ways down the line. Maybe they wait till after Double or Nothing to really start hyping this. But if they want to sell tickets on May 6th, starting May 6th, they're going to probably want to spend a couple weeks, you know, announcing at least a few matches, right, Javier?
Yeah, well, I heard that Suzuki showed up on Dark, I believe. I think I saw that on Twitter. And then you have Cole versus Ishii. They're doing some stuff. I'm also hoping that there's some sort of involvement with Impact because there's been a lot of New Japan crossover over there with their stuff and, also with the ROH stuff. So I would hope that there's a little bit, a little bit more beyond that. I'm expecting to be some things, hopefully. And that's the thing, because like on the low end is what you just described. That is going to be like Battle of the Belts, kind of like just a bonus show, like a house show kind of scenario. On the high end, it's going to be, something that's going to be something that's going to be memorable and amazing sort of story. Because, when Jay White came out and he talked about New Japan previously putting on another co-show like that, the ROH part of it, it was ROH and New Japan, and ROH did not hold up their end of the bargain. New Japan brought it, but ROH didn't. So my mind immediately went there. This is AEW, so I'm sure that things are going to be, I'm looking forward to it. I just don't know, I'm tempering expectations. I'd rather have my expectations low and be surpassed than have super high expectations and get, disappointed.
Then you're not going to like my next question.
Okay.
What are the top four matches you want to see on this show if they bring it?
God. That's a good question.
Like,
man.
AW just... versus New Japan, if that's the theme.
Yeah.
Who do you want to see Hangman Page against? Who do you want to see CM Punk against? Who do you want to see Bryan Danielson against?
Yeah, I mean, good God, Wade.
Is Kenny Omega back by then?
That's what I'm hoping. Yeah. If Kenny Omega's back, I want to see, if not necessarily in a match, but I got to see something between, I'd like to see him interact, because he's the one I'm most interested in, because I want to see him interact with Okada. I want to see him interact with Ibushi. I want to see him interact with some of those people. I don't know if the Moxley Tanahashi thing is going to continue into then, since they've had a back and forth. I don't know if it's going to continue from there. Ishii, just about anybody. Like I'm hoping if there's one dream match is that Miro comes back and he goes up against Ishii. Probably my dream match.
That is your dream match.
That yeah.
How many tickets does that sell? I mean, not zero, but. It's your dream match. It's not. Like...
It'll sell it for me. Yeah. I mean, but for the other top guys, it's just things had been setting up because like at the time when originally looked like it was being set up, it looked like it was gonna be like a Bullet Club kind of a war between like Bullet Club and at the time Gorillas of Destiny were in New Japan and they were sniping with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and I thought it might have been like the Elite versus Bullet Club, but that's changed. So it's kind of hard, and particularly since I hadn't been watching a lot of this, I'm actually just catching up on Impact. I've got just like one more episode to watch, and I'm caught up. And a lot of the storyline has been told through that, a lot of stuff through Strong, because Jay White's basically been just here in the United States building up the Bullet Club brand here in the U.S. A lot of this, Gorillaz of Destiny versus the Good Brothers happened here in the U.S. There's a lot of stuff that I just finished catching up, so it's kind of hard to picture exactly what I want. The one thing is the Evil's group, you could leave that in Japan.
I'd
be fine if that one stays in Japan.
Send them over to Impact for a special storyline. Is that okay?
No, because I like Impact too.
I know. I was going to say, you're not the right one to ask that.
I mean, if they come here and don't and leave the cheap stuff behind, I'd be happy. I just had another dream match. Toriano versus Danhausen.
Okay,
that might just be for me though.
I was gonna say, I'm pausing. Like, do you think Danhausen needs to be on this show?
with Toriano, I mean, I'm sure that some people are having a connection to just I just said, but I'd like to see that.
yeah. Okay, let's pause. Let's introduce the show, and then we'll get to phone calls and emails and a lot more about a jam-packed Dynamite. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, April 20th. 2022. Thank you for live streaming or downloading our show. You can always live stream us at wadekellerpostshow.com. You can find a direct link to our live stream in my Dynamite TV rundown at pwtorch.com. Full report with analysis. By the way, since I'm covering the show live, if you're watching, if you read the live coverage on the website, I often go back and fill out detail. I like to rewatch stuff from Dynamite because it is so. If I'm not doing the post show, if Zach Hadorn is hosting, it takes me like 3 hours to watch Dynamite, when I'm doing the report. I really pause, I rewatch stuff. So if you're reading my reports at pwtorch.com, I invite you to check it out the next day too, because I usually pad it out with more details and analysis. But that said, you can find a link to the live stream at the top and bottom of those reports and also on our Twitter feed at pwtorch. That's a good way to find us. That also has the phone number you can call or the email that you can use. Speaking of which, we'll be getting to phone calls and emails later, but first let me introduce my co-host on today's show, Javier Machado. Most often when we hear from Javier, it's the roundtable section near the end of the show before mailbag with the Javier music. But we get him for the full show tonight. It worked out well with the New Japan news, and Javier, you have been known to podcast about New Japan for PW Torch also. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm guessing the rest of the crew are too baked to have joined. Happy 420, everybody.
Yes. I you know what? I would not be opposed to somebody live streaming us right now who's just super baked. So give us a call. Let us know what you thought. I have never smoked pot and watched AEW Dynamite. It sounds like it could be an interesting experiment someday. I'm sure a lot of that goes on. I'm not quite sure how my perception of things would be different, but yeah. I mean, yeah. All right, I'll stop there. You started that, Javier. Give us a call. Okay, so speaking of which, our phone number is 347-215-8558. And no, I'm not doing a post show while high. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and then we'll bring you onto the show. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We put up our 10 years ago show yesterday on our blue logo feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast feed. And tomorrow, our current flagship will be with Todd Martin roughly every 3 weeks. We simulcast the VIP Fix as our flagship. And so with Todd, we'll talk about this New Japan announcement, get Todd's take on that, and everything else going on in wrestling. But first things first, as noted, our discussion, our focus here is on Dynamite and everything that happened on it. 347-215-8558 or wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor-publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, the host of The Fix with Todd Martin, and everything with Rich Van. We've got a two-hour episode of everything that Rich and I recorded right before Dynamite, so that'll be going up for VIP members. And boy, did we talk about everything. We lived up to the name. We're all over the place, but in a good way, some fun tangents and thorough analysis of top stories over the last week in wrestling. So VIP members, be on the lookout for that. You can go VIP and get all of our free shows, with the VIP version of all our free shows with the ads and plugs removed and bonus content, along with our lineup of VIP podcasts, a handful of which I host throughout the week, plus some other excellent ones with other voices and other specialties. So check out full details on our VIP signup page, which is pwtorch.com/goVIP. That will bring you to our VIP signup page with information on how to pay. You can pay with your Apple account directly on your iPhone. You can pay through Patreon, and you can sign up directly on our website with credit card, debit card, or PayPal. So lots of ways to go VIP and lots of ways to listen. We're compatible with the native podcast Apple app and pretty much everywhere else. So we make it real easy for you. You can also stream our shows directly from our VIP ad-free website. Okay. Let's just shift into phone calls here, and I have more I want to talk about. If callers don't bring it up and emails don't, I'll bring it up, Javier, with you as we move on here. Okay, up first we'll go to Hinton in London, Ontario. Hinton, welcome to the show. Thanks for being up first tonight.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Javier. Javier, really great that you're on this week of all weeks, actually, because I have a question specifically for you regarding the New Japan stuff. So I thought it was a pretty remarkable episode of Dynamite overall, apart from MJF and Wardlow, and maybe the Blackpool Combat Club. I have very little emotional investment in anyone, especially this announcement, and I want to be very happy for, you know, people like Javier, Rich Van, Kelly Wells, Sean Madigan. But the New Japan stuff so far is a little meh to me. For example, I don't know who Ishii is other than, you know, someone who's probably going to have a good match, and we have enough of that in AEW. There's no video package to introduce him for Rampage this week. He was just kind of a name that was thrown out there. Jay White's promo for the second time in AEW contained nothing of substance, nor did he have the delivery of someone who is supposed to be this intersectional, transcending, world-dominating heel. And he could have set the tone for things. He could have said something like, you know, for those of you who don't know us, but instead he's just like, I love the Elite. I love Bullet Club. Giggle, giggle. Come watch us in 2 months. So this brings me to my question. Yes, we're going to get good matches. Fine. I get good matches every week. But is there anyone in the New Japan roster with a unique set of storytelling skills? Specifically, not in the ring, but like in terms of being able to carry a rivalry. So there's someone who, you know, has the character pedigree to introduce himself quickly to a new audience and to carry a self-contained story for 4 to 6 weeks to get me hyped for a match which may be great or may even be a little silly or underwhelming. wouldn't really matter so much to me. And bonus points if this set of skills is somewhat unique to this New Japan wrestler and not something that we don't already have in the AEW roster.
Javier, before you answer, hitting that's a bad news for you. The answer to that is Jay White. Go ahead, Javier.
Yeah. Well, you now also have Will Ospreay is another one. Because the thing is that in New Japan, they're not really super story heavy based. So it's almost like the matches are done and then, like, you know, the wrestlers themselves, like, come up with, you know, it's all promos after the match and, you know, they build up what
it's
going to
be
about.
They do pro wrestling backwards.
So, yeah. You know, so now in terms of, like, building up, because, I mean, that's the thing. Like, the feuds are more about, you know, like, these two used to train together and you see them fight kind of thing, which is why I was when at first this, you know, that's why I brought up the fact that it was 2 years ago, looks like it was setting it up, is because then you had more of the Bullet Club, because Bullet Club is the outsider faction, the non-Japanese group. So they, you know, it looked like they would be the ones that would, like, headline a versus thing like this. But because of the pandemic, right now New Japan has mostly been, you know, Japanese talent for the most part, while a lot of the English-speaking people have been over here in the United States. So which would, you know, headlined by Jay White. You have Will Ospreay, someone who can do it. I think Zack Sabre Jr. is another one who could do it, who could help carry, because, I mean, the weight would be carried by your English-speaking audience over here, you know, from that group. With of the actual Japanese talent, I think Shingo would be one, because Shingo's got a personality, like an outsider personality, even if he doesn't, you know, you don't understand the language, the way that he emotes and stuff, he's one of them. Okada also has that kind of charisma of, you know, this guy that looks like a badass that, you know, would make you, you know, interested. But you have to, the thing is, you also have to come to the point that, you know, to come from the perspective that, you know, this is another country's stars. So obviously, if you're not following that, you know, that promotion, it's kind of like, you know, like if you watch the Olympics, you might not know who's, you know, the gymnast from, you know, China. You don't know those people, but you could, recognize the talent when you actually watch them do what they do. And, you know, some of it's also going to have to be carried by, you know, the excitement of other people around you, you know, other people around you. So that's pretty much like, you know, and hidden because of what you're referring to, that's why I would also think that it's a possibility that it might be more of a, you know, I keep my I'm trying to, like, temper everything, because they might understand that and it'd be just more, instead of it being, like, built as a pay-per-view for it being, like, the end of storylines, like a Double or Nothing, it might be a pay-per-view which is just essentially a bunch of what I would call exhibition matches, getting these wrestlers out together and see some fun matches. Like you mentioned, you know, we already see good wrestling, but, you know, we'll see leading up to it whether they start building storylines or if it's like what you said, that's just going to be some good wrestling. But I wouldn't sneeze on that because, you know, a lot of wrestlers in New Japan have a different style, and that's personally why I like, you know, New Japan is seeing, like, Zack Sabre Jr. I dream of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jonathan Gresham. I know they've wrestled before, but they both have, like, a mat based style, and I want to see those two, like, counter, you know the counter holds and stuff like that. Those are kind of the things that I'm looking forward to, and exposed to new styles, basically.
How many AEW fans, Javier, are in the category of, I don't know a lot about this, I don't feel like I'm part of the club, but I want to experience it? Because you use a key phrase, like, a lot of people in that building might not know a lot that's going on, but they just want to be in that. It's like, I'd go to a big college basketball game with two teams who I don't know any of the players or any of their history, just to be in a college basketball environment. You know what I mean? Like, where there's a home team and the crowd, the students are just going absolutely crazy. And, I mean, you can't help but get just drawn into that. Do you think AEW has a big portion of their fan base that is eager to experience something that they've heard a lot about but don't know a lot about, but they want to, you know, cross into that realm. And this can be sort of a gateway to do that, because certainly there'll be a lot of fans traveling there who can talk all day, you know, talk to Europe about New Japan and what this means to them. But how many people are going to be like, well, I've heard a lot about them. This is my chance to go see what it's all about.
Yeah, I think because I don't want to call it a honeymoon period, because it's been, you know, years now that AEW has been around. But, you know, I was on with Greg on Wrestling Night in America. And,
you had to think
about
that, didn't you? Where was wrestling? Was it in America?
I keep wanting to say Sunday for some reason. I keep thinking that Sunday is in the title. That's the thing. I keep thinking Sunday is in the title. That's why I always have a password in calling it.
I like my joke better, but that's fine.
I know, but, you know.
Wrestling Night in – where was it again?
I recognize – it's because I recognize that the first time I've paused saying that. That's why
I know
that. So, but, yeah, I think people have faith that they're going to book good wrestling. So, you know, I think the people who like AEW just because of the wrestling and could care less about the we'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay.
about the actual storylines and stuff. There are people who prefer, you know, they just want to see, you know, good matches. That fan is going to follow them for that. Hopefully, if they do their job right, it's going to be on AEW to also interest the people in the New Japan stars also, particularly the ones that, you know, I mean, it'll be easier with the ones that actually speak the language. Like I said, Zack Sabre Jr., Zack Sabre Jr., Will Ospreay, Jeff Cobb, don't want to forget him. You know, those guys can carry the bulk of the promo and then, you know, go on from there. Plus in Chaos, you know, which is Okada's group, you already have some people here like Rocky Romero. He could be the voice for them. Rocky Romero, the Best Friends, for, you know, better or worse. Pretty much the only one I think that they won't have someone who could carry a storyline would be Naito's group, because it's only Los Ingobernables de Jabón. They are the, you know, they're only Japanese wrestlers, I believe, in that group. So they would have, you know, not have a mouthpiece, except for the fact that Andrade and when he was La Sombra, Naito is part of that group. Which, speaking of dream matches, way that would be another thing. Would be Naito and Andrade crossing paths. You know, so that there are ways that you can get. Build stories around that if that's what they're planning on doing. Again, other option, if it's just an exhibition, then it'd be more like we're going to give you a bunch of good matches with these, you know, cool wrestlers, and just they're going to sell it out anyway, because there are going to be enough people who are going to be interested in watching us go see it.
Is your prediction a sellout, or do you think it'll be more like 8,000 or 12,000? Because that's a big arena.
I would guess it's a sellout. I mean, okay. Unless something really weird happens,
AEW can sell out in Chicago. I mean, you know, even without New Japan, they can draw really well in Chicago. So they have a big base who will be happy to get a big show. I people who are skeptical that it would sell out, it's like, well, even if they subtract New Japan from it and go, we're going back to United Center, they might sell it out. But I don't think it's a guarantee. You know, I mean, I say that as it's an accomplishment if they do. That shouldn't be taken away from them.
Yeah, and the other thing is, for the people who are primarily New Japan fans, I believe this would be based on the timing. I'm going to have to double-check when it starts. It's going to be right before the start of the G1. So it would kind of be like because it's 26th, I believe it starts early July is when the G1 starts, if I remember correctly. So it's going to be like a gateway to that. So it means it's the last, like a bunch of stories will be coming to an end as the G1 starts. So that's a possibility there, and I'm hoping against hope that we also, while there, also get announcements that there'll be some AEW talent that's going to be joining the G1 if the entire field is not full yet, and then that could be, you know, also add motivation where, you know, you if there are going to be AEW stars that are going to be in the G1, some of the matches might be built for that night to showcase that too.
I'm telling you, two wrestlers from AEW are going to be in G1. Which two do you want that announcement to be, if it's just two?
Man, me personally, probably Moxley and Bryan would be my two. I know Moxley already did it, but having Moxley on one and one side and Bryan on the other block, Bryan probably with Wheeler Yuta as his young boy, and Moxley with Shooter Umino. That's all I need for that G1.
Now if I expand it to four, who are the next two?
Miro and has Gresham officially signed?
Yeah,
I'd like the idea of Gresham. I like Miro. I'd stay away from Punk because I don't see Punk as like a G1 guy. Me personally, I know some people would love to see him, but I don't think that's a.
How about Cole? What would that do for Cole?
I mean, I don't know, because Cole's a small dude. He'd be most likely in the Best of Super Junior. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, Cole would be an interesting.
Gresham in there.
Yeah,
Cole's got like 7 inches on Gresham.
Yeah, you're. Jordan Grace might have some words with you. Cole would be interesting. I'm not discounting him, but you know, Cole. I'd have to think, because I mean, honestly, Wade, AEW's roster is so freaking huge right now.
I know.
That every now and then, Aleister Black or Malakai Black would be another one that would be interesting. So I, as the show goes on, I'll probably start remembering wrestlers, because like I said, their roster is just so massive.
Yeah. Okay, Hinton, back to you. Good question and good answer from Javier there.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jay White. He ticks one of my boxes in that I think he probably could carry a 4 to 6 week feud, but he doesn't tick the other box of he's just not good at introducing himself. He's just too much of a – I don't like these Bullet Club references. But I'll move on from this. I'm just – I don't mean to come off as
that thing that you mentioned about Jay White. Jay White, when he first got pushed, there was pushback, and I think that might be a thing. I think he might be one of those wrestlers where he doesn't necessarily make a good first impression, but as you get to know him and start getting – you understand him, you have to, you know, get him, and once you get him, you start getting more into it, because when he was first pushed at the top, he was kind of weird, and there was a lot of pushback on that. And then eventually, like, people who stayed with him were like, oh, yeah, I can see why this guy is a cool guy. I do think he's a little bit overhyped, because, you know, some people call him, like, the best wrestler in the world. I'm like, okay, slow your roll. He's in the conversation, but, you know.
I
don't mind eccentricities, at least though, to the extent that Wade does. As, for example, I was a bit more forgiving of Kenny Omega, I think. But it's just the Bullet Club stuff, which just there's just way too much baggage, unknown baggage that I think just kind of alienates me a little. And then you combine that with the ROH stuff, it brings me from the border of skeptical to cynical, and I really don't want to be cynical. I'll try to remain optimistic about it. If I was in Chicago, I'd love to go for sure. And I do think that, you know, I've watched some Wrestle Kingdom shows. I think there are New Japan talents that have in-ring abilities that are a bit more can't-miss than, you know, than AEW talents. So it's not just good matches, it's unique matchups, which is what I would, at least right now, sell this thing on. And which is why video packages are a little more essential, right? Speaking of which, brief point to bring up, the Owen Hart qualifier, we've got Dax Harwood versus Cash Wheeler, which was announced, which was sandwiched among 72 other announcements. And considering the month these guys have had, I haven't watched all their matches this month, but I get the vibe that they're on to something special. Shouldn't that have been treated better?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, but this is a company that had a world title match on free cable, or if that's a contradiction, whatever. Taz called it free TV. On Rampage, and Excalibur mentioned it briefly once in passing at the end of the opening tag match, and they didn't mention it again until Mark Henry interviewed the two guys at 40 minutes into the show. Like, it was just jaw-dropping. Like, it's not like even a TNT title match. I would be like, what are they thinking? But they did, and even on Dynamite 2 days earlier, it was barely mentioned. Like they don't elevate things. They present things. Here's what we're doing, and Excalibur will tell you very quickly. And then you're just expected to memorize it. Like, you need a whiteboard, and you're supposed to take notes on this and enter it in Google Calendar if you get an alarm. Like, they rely on you to be refreshing the Twitter feed. They're not going to tell you what's important. They're just going to throw one thing after another, after another, after another, and it makes for an exhilarating viewing experience. But it's not good business. It doesn't lead to popping ratings when you don't elevate something like WWE elevates Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. And I'm not against more of an ensemble approach than WWE's, for sure. But you got to protect your world title. And if you give a world title match away, you got to do that. And to a lesser degree, but it's not off point, you got to make it a bigger deal when Dax and Cash are wrestling each other. Like, it's just, yeah, I really think it would be good for them to just take a deep breath, step back, and go, all right, are we overwhelming people and leveling out things that shouldn't be leveled out? There have to be some things that are more important than others in the way that we emphasize them. And I just think they're weak in that area right now. Javier, do you notice that?
Yeah, that was one of the topics that I covered with Greg, is that every single segment's a 15-minute segment, and they're all given the same amount of weight. You know, because for example, like today, Vanessa Bourne, what's her – let me see my notes. Where is she? Daniel Camella, I know it was because Britt Baker coming back, but that felt just about as important as anything else that was on the show, the way that it was framed. So when it was just essentially a glorified squash match for Britt to win and cut her promo afterwards, and that's one of the things that, you know, I keep bringing up about, you know, why Hangman Page doesn't feel as high, as hot as he should, is because, you know, they don't talk about him as much. He should be, if not opening the show in terms of, like, you know, him cutting a promo or anything, show him coming into the door, talk about him, mentioning him throughout the show. Kenny Omega felt important because they did that. You know, Kenny Omega would appear at other parts in the show that wasn't just his 15-minute allotted segment. Not enough, I don't think, but, you know, and that's the thing. And that's why, you know, you need to choose what's important on every single show. Your one, two, maybe three talking points that you want people to remember at the end of the night, and the other stuff, just, you know, let it be as it's going to, you know, just let it happen. And because I think, was it Vince McMahon who said that, you know, you want everybody to come out thinking about one or two things per show?
Kevin Dunn said allegedly two and a half things. Every show, there should be two things that absolutely everybody knows is the most important thing that happened on the show, and there should be one other thing in the back of their mind that's developing that is not quite ripe yet. And AEW has 24 things that all are equal. And it just, yeah. Yeah. All right, hitting.
Yeah, I just don't get the sense that Hangman Page even lobbies as much for himself backstage. You listen to this guy on, like, Renee Young's podcast, you know, like, he's probably done with his segment, then he's probably drinking with Dark Order or something. He's, like, the nicest guy in the world, almost too nice. He's probably not going to be like, you know, Steve Austin was, which, you know, was to the detriment of his personal life. But I think there's a bit of a middle ground that's needed between going home and, you know, coming up with t-shirt ideas and not even giving your wife any attention to, you know, at least just kind of being more involved with the show's production and thinking about how you can come across better. But I want to pivot to the Blackpool Combat Club. I've noticed this on Rampage last week as well as this week. Yuta and Danielson are coming out from separate entrances. And initially, when we were talking about this faction, we were like, let's give it a few weeks now. I mean, it's been a few weeks. They're still coming out of separate entrances, but they still beat a pretty, you know, Dante Martin was actually super popular not too long ago, right? And they really beat him down this week. And what else do I have here? So I'm not sure what to make of them. And do you think that, you know, they've also alluded to Lee Moriarty. Do you reckon there's room for someone like him in this faction, or is his style a little too different? And Darius Martin, I think, was conspicuous by his absence, not teaming with his brother this week.
Javier, go ahead and take any of that.
I think that it's funny when you mention Dante Martin. I saw a meme on Twitter, which was a kid who was had like a bunch of apples. He had taken a bite out of each one, and each one they had put the name of one of the wrestlers on there. You know, you had Miro, and then Aleister Black, and then the kid's Tony Khan. Like he takes, you know, and Samoa Joe in his mouth. Like he gets interested in one guy, and you see a lot of them, and then he kind of like all of a sudden they're gone.
Wow, wow, that's a good graphic representation of Tony Khan's booking. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so that's kind of what it felt like, with the exception of Brock Anderson, because you know he has really been on. You know, but Lee Moriarty had gotten a little bit of a push. Dante Martin. And then, you know, having them show up, in terms of like what I think they're going to do, I don't know if they're going to essentially really put them together now, because I've got the feeling that the idea behind them right now is to use them as a linchpin for a trios title if they finally end up putting those in. That's probably my most because, you know, Tony Khan needs an announcement every week or every other week. So I'm pretty sure that we'll, you know, one of these weeks we're going to get the announcement of a trios title likely. And it just like they put together Kenny Omega and Hangman Page and gave them the titles, despite you having all these other tag teams at the time. I think they might end up doing that. So, you know, in order to give some weight to a trios title, if they do, give it to those guys and then maybe add people afterwards to that group.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an adrenaline junkie pace to Tony Khan's booking of new acquisitions and big announcements and acquiring brands or, it's weird. It seems to be accelerating. Maybe it's just my perception. But, I mean, you know, we're still reeling from, like, an ROH title being defended on a Battle of the Belts with a world title challenger who had never appeared or been mentioned on AEW TV before. And we get the quick little bio in a match. And we're still, like, trying to deal with everything going on between ROH and AEW. And now New Japan gets added to the mix. And we already had Impact. And, you know, little GCW. So, yeah, it's weird. It feels a little – I mean, I'm not saying it's not going to work pretty well, but it feels just a little out of control. There's just a lot happening and a lack of just, yeah, that focus. But some people, you know, some people love it. But, you know, I look at it through the lens of not just what's fun to watch, but what's the most efficient use of everything that you have. And what are glaringly inefficient uses of a lot of what you have, and that bite out of each apple thing is a pretty interesting visual representation of things. Hey, back to you.
My final point today is regarding the main event. The Darby Allin's not really doing anything wrong per se, at least in terms of performance. Crowd energy in his matches are a little down, which is understandable. He's sort of been phased away, but. I wasn't a fan of some of the. I think there's a one unprotected chair shot he took at the near the turnbuckle, which I'm like, yeah. And then they showed a replay of him. I'm like, hey, you probably don't want to be doing that. Sting's dive, which, okay, you know, the Sting thing is fun for now, but I wonder if AEW's built in sort of an off ramp for themselves in that when does this stop? Because Hogan and Flair wrestled until I think one of them dislocated their hips in the ring. So do they have enough foresight to, you know, to be able to tell Sting, okay, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, before you get into an accident and then you're forced to stop, we need to kind of talk to you and say, listen, this tour's gone on long enough, the crowd's not really popping as much as it used to for your act anymore. You know, now we've got a rein it in a little. What do you guys think?
I mean, part of the issue is, does anyone end up feeling like really special after they're around for a couple of months? And you know, Sting was just kind of there every week, and there's some value in that, I think, early with AEW. But they're all, I think we're kind of at a point where, you know, Sting being gone and then a big announcement for him showing up, and it's become the focus of the show, and they build around it, and they mention it more than just once in passing before it happens, might be a better use of Sting right now. Over, I think that would mean more over the next 12 months if Sting appeared, you know, on, you know, two different storylines for 6 weeks at a time, as opposed to just sort of coming and going randomly whenever Darby's doing something. Javier.
Well, it's weird because it with the storyline, I'm like, I am having a hard time remembering how we got to this coffin match. You know, I don't remember the steps that we took to get here. And I think that's because, like, the storyline probably happened, like, a couple weeks ago, and there's so much stuff going on in AEW that I forgot this was going on. I'll also reference the Serena Deeb, Sheeta upcoming Philadelphia Street Fight, where, you know, it should feel hotter than it is because of, you know, how hot it was when the feud first started. And I know that Sheeta went to Japan, I believe, to do some stuff over there, and they basically sold it as she, you know, had been hurt by Deeb. And, you know, she comes back now, and it feels should be hotter. It was the same thing with this match with Darby Allin. In terms of, you know, so, like, seeing Sting again, it felt like I haven't – I know it's not true, but it felt like I haven't seen Sting in, like, a couple of weeks now. And I agree in terms of this time in the Sting basically jumping off the balcony while cool, and it looked like he was, like, super protected. It was like, you know, the people catching him were like, we're going to catch Sting. He's a natural national treasure, and we're not going to let him get hurt. The match felt weird to me. I was not a big fan of that final match.
And, you know, I ripped on the popcorn table that Wardlow knocked over a few weeks back when he walked into the arena. And, like, they had the most fake-ass looking table with bags of popcorn, evenly spaced, no way to pay. It was just a folding table. And it's just like, it's so dumb. It's so Bush League. And I know some people want to look past that and go, but, look at how cool this is and that is. But it's like, some of the detail work with AEW right now, it's just minor league. And the coincidence, and maybe I missed something, but they just happened to brawl right where Sting was standing with a sign, and they just happened to decide to rip up the sign to antagonize Sting, and then the reveal, like, it's just, is there anything to explain how that just happened to happen, Javier?
Sting is a little bit magic. That spot happened a lot in WCW, so it was just going back to that spot, because, and in WCW, he was pretty much magic. I'm fine with that. I'm less fine with the actual balcony spot, because that balcony spot happened in Revolution, and this felt more like people popped for that, so let's do it again, when it wasn't necessary. I think that was more of so that entire section after the reveal, and they got to the to the spot, it felt like, oh, instead of feeling like the fight naturally went to that spot, it felt like, okay, we're going to go to the spot so we get ready for the balcony jump. And that's because that exact same thing happened at Revolution. And, it's like, you know, now you're repeating the spots, and it's becoming a signature, as opposed to, like, something you see, like, oh, wow, this is cool the first time we saw it. You know, just seeing it again is kind of like, not special, because it's the second time we've seen it in, like, really short order.
I'm not particularly convinced or swayed by, well, Sting is magic. I don't think most people sitting at home are going, that didn't feel contrived at all. Like, AEW, there's people watching who are rolling their eyes at that. Like, the wrestler just happened to brawl right where – how did Sting know to just stand there like that in that spot of all the options where wrestlers might have brawled or not brawled? I just think there's a lot of people rolling their eyes at that stuff. And, you know, WWE's guilty of this stuff too, you know, but it's not just, you know, but come on. There's ways – sometimes it's just not worth it. You know, what's the saying? The blank isn't worth a blank. I can't think of the saying, but it's just not worth it. You know, there's just other ways you can introduce Sting into the match than the best defense is magic.
I know. I mean, I'm just saying that that's, I think, what they're going for. That.
Yeah, I know. But come on, AEW. All right, because Tony Khan didn't want invisible cameras. Anytime a camera goes into a locker room, he has a wrestler like saying, Moxley, hey, follow me in here, or MJF, follow us in here. Like, there's no dash cams. Well, there was one with Santana Ortiz, and I asked Tony about it. He texted me and explained it, and then never did it again because his explanation wasn't good. I had a counter argument to his explanation, which is and he's never done that again. But like, this isn't better. Like, this is dash cam crap. Like,
to be fair, Wade, it did cross my mind. Normally, I wouldn't care about it. It doesn't like hit me as it hit you. In this case, it did because this was like deep in the audience, Because like if this spot had happened like at ringside, that would be fine because it'd be like it's more obvious that he came to the immediate ringside because likely someone's gonna be wrestling in that area but the fact that they went this happened in the corner of the audience and it was like at that point it was less likely that this brawl would have happened in this location, particularly since Darby was the one tossed in that direction and
yeah,
not
Darby didn't lure them.
Exactly. So if it were Darby luring, that would be another, that'd be a different story.
That's the thing, Javier, is you can make this better with just an extra minute of discussion.
Yeah.
You just talk about it. Like, someone has to go, wait, what's the logic in them, the heels throwing Darby right where Sting is standing? And someone goes, hey, instead, let's have Darby leap over the railing and say, come on, come get me. And the heels come get him, and then Sting holding up the sign is kind of in their face a little bit, like pretty obnoxious. But it's Darby who lured them into that situation. That works. I had the same problem with MJF last week when he leaned on the ringside barricade. He leaned backwards in a pose. He never does that. But he leaned back against the barricade, and then Wardlow happened to be right behind him dressed as security. I'm like, how did Wardlow know to stand right there, and what are the odds MJF would do something he doesn't do, which is lean with his back exposed to the crowd in that corner? All that had to happen is the security guy could have just gotten MJF's attention, and MJF in a fit just went and got in his face, and there's a way to do it. And you might think, well, is it worth it? And I'm like, well, it is worth it because it's easy to do, and it's always better to have something seem believable than completely unbelievable. I just wrestling it, you want people to be immersed and not have these, happy coincidences. It's bad in movies, it's bad in TV shows, it's bad in books. Book publishers reject books that have happy coincidences because it's not good writing. And AW does it too much, and they just need quality control. All right. Hinton, back to you for any final comments.
I think Deus Ex Machina might be the word for it. I don't think it's magic so much because the only instance AEW did magic was with Matt Hardy, the teleporting. And the minute Brian Alvarez finger wagged them, I don't think they ever did that again. But I think the coincidence stuff is stuff that's happened in the Attitude Era as well. So I'm kind of a little bit more forgiving of that just in terms of, theatrics. It's still my limit to logic, my nitpicking doesn't quite extend that far, I don't think. At least for feuds that I'm interested in.
I resent calling it nitpicking. I think it's asking for an extra minute of thought to make something easily, exponentially better than narrative shattering and stupid. And that's not nitpicking. I strongly disagree that that's nitpicking. I think it's an issue in wrestling that is sloppy, lazy, and amateur. And that does not, that those three things don't apply to nitpicking. Nitpicking is something completely different. Yeah.
Of course, and I think you have a right to say that. It's just, I would rephrase it. Instead of nitpicking, I would say top three things that I would complain about in terms of what shatters my investment and my verisimilitude. I don't think that reaches the top three. I guess I can phrase it in that context, just because I associate because I associate those moments with better days, including with people like Stone Cold, The Rock, etc. So I'm just a little bit more forgiving of it. But good conversation. I think I've been on a while, so
yeah.
I'll have to clear the other callers now. Thank you guys for chatting with
me. Thanks, Ed. Good to talk to you. I saw your name right up. By the way, there were a lot of things, and I say this, and it doesn't make me popular in some circles. There are a lot of really dumb things that were done in the Attitude Era that happened to coincide with drawing a lot of money, but they drew a lot of money despite it, not because of it. And our fondness, as we look back at that wonderful, wonderfully successful era, has to be, we have to temper how much of that should be repeated or how much of that they simply got away with because they had Mick Foley, DX, Hall and Nash and Waltman at their peak, and of course Stone Cold and The Rock and Mr. McMahon. Like, those things just camouflaged a lot of sloppiness and weakness and really dumb things that were done on those TV shows. And when you don't have that talent, you got to be tighter with what you do. You know, or you're making mistakes. Doesn't have to be top three to still not be worth fixing or not be worth mentioning. Anyway, so I want to take a – I saw an email come in, and it was positive about the show. And I want to go to that. At least I think it is based on the opening sentence. This is Zach in Texas. he says, gentlemen, what an excellent night of pro wrestling. Dustin Rhodes is way better than he has any business being at 53. Agree with that. I've been touting and pushing for Dustin to get more more TV time. I think he's a compelling character, still good in the ring, and that promo on Rampage deserved to be seen by the million people who watched this match instead of the 400-some thousand who watched Rampage. That match with CM Punk was a clinic. The Blackpool Combat Club continues to rule so hard. William Regal on commentary during their matches is such a treat. Totally agree with that. Regal is awesome. Jungle Boy and Kyle O'Reilly had another great wrestling match. I'm very glad that Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti have leaned into being a heel, but I never imagined Dan Lambert would be turned de facto face.
Yep.
It worked, though. Oh, my God. What was the line about you've turned into douchebag high schoolers who can't keep your tongues out of each other's mouths? I mean, I swear there had to be spit takes and huge pops in living rooms all over the country. he's so right. His big joke wasn't over the line, and the crowd popped. This could be very interesting. Sting dressing as a Sting fan will always pop me, but not as Sting doing New Jack dives onto people. So that touches on our last conversation. That man is drinking from a fountain of youth only he and Dustin know about. When I saw the thumbtacks on the inside of the lid, I fully expected a repeat of last summer when Darby Coffin dropped the coffin with Ethan Page inside. So I was pleasantly surprised that didn't happen. I'm glad he closed the lid on that feud, literally and figuratively speaking. So yeah, Javier, he brings up Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti. I'm still not sure if they're fully okay with admitting that they're obnoxious douchebags, as Dan Lambert roughly put it, because Sammy's like, I will always work hard for you people, all that sappy crap, and like, I'll always work hard for you. How about you just try to win your matches instead of wink at the camera before you do a high spot? And so it seemed like I'm still not sure he's not going, well, we've got our fans and we have our haters. Or was that totally sarcastic when he said, I will always work hard for you? Was he almost making fun of his former character, his former self? And it is just full on heel. What was your interpretation of that?
Did you see what he was wearing? I think that was full on heel at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're still stringing some people along. You know, I think they're having fun with that, but you know, it felt that way on, Battle of the Belts. Where, you know, at the end of that match, he won with a low blow and stuff like that. And it feels like they're
fighting, but Tony Schiavone said right afterwards, he's fighting fire with fire because of the eye poke.
I did not have the audio on because I was on with Greg. So.
You got Guevara doing a heel move, and then you have Schiavone going, well, it was totally justified because it was just in response. Like, what?
I really wish Tony would actually stop that. I mean,
I know.
He's not supposed to be the one. Tony is such a nice guy. He's not the one who should be giving the heel the benefit of the doubt.
No.
Or, sorry, heelish moves the benefit of the doubt.
Justifying him. Yeah. Both-sizing it, yeah.
Exactly. So, if he said
but here in defense of Tony, he was right. They ought to not book a finish like that.
Yeah.
They ought to book a finish where it's clear who the heel is instead of giving fans a chance to sort of, you know, kind of project the blame or the shame on who they want based on who they personally like. Like, it shouldn't be left up to the fans to make these 50-50 calls on whether they like someone or not. Like, someone should be likable or unlikable the vast majority of the time in pro wrestling, and that's not happening. It's just muddy. It's needlessly muddied.
Yeah, the big tells for me were the obnoxious making out and the
yes,
and him saying you're just angry because my girlfriend's hotter than you. So
yep, oh totally.
I mean, that
could play to, but like you said, maybe he's kind of stringing some people along, and I wonder if there's not a little bit of hope. Like he's maybe hoping he could, like kind of the whole Cody thing all over again. Maybe if I rip on the people who are booing us by saying they have ugly girlfriends, maybe the people cheering us will not only keep cheering us, but will win over some people who think, well, if I boo Sammy, then I'm admitting my girlfriend's ugly?
If there are people who are still cheering him, these are not people I want to hang out with.
Yeah,
so.
I know. Good point.
But yeah, I'm amazed that after his reaction when they were down here in Miami and the nuclear heat that Lambert got, and for him to be like a baby face, and Ethan Page with his, you know, he was amazing during that. His fire I'm ready to see whatever the hell he's going to do next.
I think it's unfortunate because do you think it's good that Lambert is a de facto babyface? Do you think it's good that Ethan Page is cutting this heel promo that's actually now a babyface promo?
Well,
I mean,
his thing was because I think it was the promo where he talked about his kid, and I think that's like that promo's what turned him face.
Yeah,
you know,
and Sammy going, I don't give a shit about your daughter. Like,
and they repeat that
3-year-old who's trying to get a good night's sleep. Like,
they repeated that with you know, I don't care about your dead grandpa.
Dead grandpa, yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like, you know, I'm beginning to enjoy it now because it's just like so vile and disgusting, the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I'm interested to see where it's going. And then like, and there was also the good back and forth that him and Kazarian had, where they acknowledged their history and stuff, and just like the way he's carrying himself, they felt like it's a full blown like babyface turn for them. It's just weird they have Lambert. Lambert is sort of he's cutting face, you know, he's cutting face promos, but he's still kind of like, he kind of feels like he's still a heel, sort of, but I think that's just because of Dan Lambert and not because he's trying to.
Yeah. Yep. Let me see what else Zach brought up in the email if we haven't covered it. Black. Okay. One thing. I'm not into this tunnel thing either. Like, I want one entrance. I don't want heel and face entrances. Like I'm for heels and baby faces, but like, you don't want it to be that regimented, that like literal, that there you declare yourself based on the tunnel you walk through, and there's like this, the announcers don't really talk about it, but it's sort of like, oh, did you notice? And I don't know, I think it's too cute by half. I think heels should be heels based on, not they declare, you know, walking through the tunnel that they're heel. They should be heel because of how they act, how they conduct themselves. The fans rejecting their personality, not proudly or via assignment walking through a certain entrance tunnel. I would not approve that if I were designing a new wrestling set. And that has to do with the whole Blackpool Combat Club and Wheeler Yuta coming out one and Brian through the other. It's like, if you have to tell a story based on that, like, that's not good storytelling. You know, oh, Brian went through the heel one and Yuta through the babyface one. What does that mean? And they don't even talk about it or own it. Anyway.
Obviously. Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the two exits, because it kind of makes sense that you don't want the two wrestlers, you know, in my mind, you don't want the two wrestlers about to wrestle each other, like, you know, congregating backstage. You know, I'm fine with that. I would be fine if they just switch it up back and, you know, switch it.
I'm totally fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And I mean, it would make sense that, I mean, it, to me, it kind of makes sense because like if you picture it as two different locker rooms that you're taking, you know, it would make sense that the heels would congregate with the heels and the baby faces congregate with the baby faces.
Although this is not the NBA. There isn't two locker rooms where there's half the people and one half the other. You know, when you're backstage at these arenas, there's 20 locker rooms. You know, there's this clique of women. There's Cody with his open door and Brandy with their gifts for all the commoners. There's the rookie locker room. There's the CM Punk locker room. There's Darby's locker room. There's Kenny Omega and the Bucks in their locker room. There's CM Punk hanging out with like, so there isn't just two locker rooms. And anyway, I mean, I'm being more literal than you, but like, you don't, it's not
you
like
you just
everybody.
Broke the illusion, Wade. Come on.
Yeah. Yes. But the thing is the star, and I wrote about this and talked about this, the stars, some of them have Bryan Danielson turned down getting his own locker room when he signed. You know, he was offered one. He turned it down. Kenny and the Bucks have their own. CM Punk has his own. So, you know, it's just Cody had his own, but he, you know, had a bunch of young people who worshipped him, hanging out with him. You know, so yeah, but nevertheless, there are, I know I'm shattering an illusion, but they don't really talk. Did they even talk about heel locker rooms and face locker rooms? Like,
no. I mean, the only time it actually, well, not locker rooms, but as far as the heel entrance and exit, the only time they really brought it up was with Cody. So that's why I kind of like disregard that.
Yeah.
Cause you know, Cody obviously was playing with the idea of like, he's the one who really, if you're paying attention, you'll notice that the heels all come out of one side and the baby faces all come out of the other. If you're paying close attention, they never really underlined that until Cody made it a thing. That's when it really became obvious, I think.
Yeah. And no, totally. It's like when Dolph Ziggler wore hashtag heel on his trunks. It's like, no, you don't actually declare yourself that because bad guys don't think they're bad guys.
Yeah.
They just
except
are who they are.
Except for MJF.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And that's sometimes the exception proves the rule, or the exception, you know, the exception works because it isn't standard.
Yeah.
All right. So we are live streaming here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Javier Machado is my co-host. If you're just joining us mid-stream here, literally. Thanks for tuning in. We welcome your phone calls. If you're listening to this conversation live and you want to yell at us or cheer us or add a different point or give your point of view, you are invited to do so. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Tell your friends on social media about us too. Let them know how they can find us and subscribe and download. We'd love to have your recommendation lead to new listeners and new callers. We say this a lot. I say this semi-regularly. We'd love to hear from more of our female listeners, Ashley, Lindsay. There's so we every now and then we hear from some of them. And I say, call again. And they don't call, they don't push one, but we'd love to get a diverse mix of perspectives and voices, including more female callers. So consider that a call to action. And our email address, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, if you want to contribute that way. We got some good emails coming up. But first, or up next, we'll go to Brian in Boston. Brian, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
Just enjoying the St. Louis Cardinals off to a 7-3 start, so that's always good. But all right. I thought Dynamite was pretty solid. I mean, it didn't like wow my socks off or anything, but you know, it was a good solid show like it usually is. I did kind of think it was a smart move to have Adam Cole and Jay White kind of interrupt Tony Khan's announcement, because we remember what happened the last time he was on live TV. It wasn't terribly good, so I think that was a good call to do that.
I love Tony on television, but I mean, yeah, he's a character. He's different, you know. I mean, he just his enthusiasm and sort of a little bit of kind of the awkwardness to his body language, but the just completely like it's not about not being self aware. It's about I don't care. Like, it's just, I don't care. I'm living my best life, and I'm giving you the wrestling that I love, and I hope you love it too, and I'm excited. I mean, there's just such genuine, palpable enthusiasm in any time that he's on camera or off camera in front of fans. Like, I still remember at a Full Gear weekend, and, you know, he came out, I think it was on the Friday Rampage taping, if I remember right, and he came out in like, he was like talked and then he waved to the fans. I think it was after Rampage. And he talked and then he was waving at the fans in the ring. Then he jumped to ringside and he just stood there and waved at the fans and smiled like, hi, hey, hi. And then he like started walking up down the aisle and up the ramp. And he stopped and waved. And it's like, yay, hey, everybody. And he's like, he's waving. Everybody's cheering him. And like, this is going on for like 90 seconds. And then he gets like to the tunnel and you think it's over. Then he turned around and ran back to the center of the stage and waved and jumped up and down more. Like, he's just loving what he's doing. And it's fun to just see somebody who's not like in a shell or self-conscious or trying to put on, you know, I'm super cool and I'm an executive.
Someone who's a terrible person like Vince McMahon, kind of like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think people at this point think Tony's a pretty good dude. You know, I think he has that going for him, and I hope he, you know, it doesn't let people down over time. But really, I think so far so good on that account. Not a flawless public figure by any means. Some of his social media interaction, you know, can seem petulant or petty sometimes, or reactionary or knee-jerk in a way that, you know, I'm sure his PR people are like, no, Tony, talk to us first, please. but yeah, but you're right. I mean, there, you know, I thought, you know, Adam Cole magically appearing on the screen when Tony Khan should be in, you know, in charge of the people who are in charge of who goes on the big screen. It felt kind of ballsy of someone to authorize that. I would have rather had Cole come out onto the stage and, you know, like physically be a present that interrupted presence like Jay White. But you know, it was a show with just too many happy coincidences for my taste, as is quite clear in the hour plus I've complained about it. Anyway, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Khan kind of recognizes that he gets a little hyper on TV, and I think that's probably why he had the Adam Cole, Jay White thing. But, you know, I think he'd probably do himself a world of good. I mean, if he wants to talk on TV or something, just use his regular interview voice. You know, he doesn't need to get, like, all yet, like,
why
over.
Why would you say that? Yeah.
I mean, he comes across in his interviews very well. I just think if he used that kind of voice, I think he would be fine.
He does kind of force the guttural, you know, kind of deep voice. I'm going to make up for it. But I mean, he's rambunctious and just, you know, he leans into it body language wise. So yeah, he doesn't have to do the deep voice announce, you know, thing, because it doesn't feel, I think what Tony has going for him, this is my point, is authenticity. You know, there's just an authenticity to who he is, and he seems personable. He seems like an everyman, you know, regardless of his family's net worth. He seems like a just exuberant, rambunctious pro wrestling fan, and that nobody in the audience thinks that they're a bigger fan than he is of pro wrestling. And there's value in that. You know, it's the opposite of Stephanie McMahon, who comes across very patronizing and put on when she, you know, talks about fans. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, breaking news or stating something controversial, although I think she's self-aware of how patronizing and transparently patronizing she is as she looks down at the peons who waste their time with wrestling, but she's glad they do because it makes her rich. You know, Tony is the opposite of that. So he has that going for him. So, yeah, just, you know, lean in on that. Anyway, go ahead, Brian.
Plus, Khan actually listens to the fans and gives them what they want, unlike the McMahon family, who could give less of a damn. Because, I mean, perfect example, he acknowledged what went wrong with Satnam Singh with the, well, not with Singh personally, but with the way that was handled last week's Dynamite. And on Rampage, they actually handled it pretty well. I think that's actually the way they should have debuted him. But, you know, when I saw the promo tonight with Joe and Singh and Dutt and Lethal, I'm surprised I remembered all four of the names, but, it was a pretty solid video package, and they had the subtitles for when he was speaking Punjab or Hindi or whatever language it was. So, you know, he adapts in stride as it goes. So there's a lot of value in that. But anyway,
I know WWE's had a 35 or 50 year head start, however you want to do the math on this, or 6 year head start on AEW. So I preface my comment on that, but when people say Vince McMahon doesn't give the fans what they want, you know, on Friday nights, four times as many people are watching SmackDown as watch Rampage. SmackDown is the lead-in for Rampage, and Rampage, in, you know, wrestling fans should be aware that that show exists. And it's not a three-hour SmackDown, it's only two. And over 75% of people who watch SmackDown are choosing to not then flip the channel to watch Rampage. So as much as Tony is giving fans what they want, fair enough. My point on that is Vince McMahon is giving a lot of people what they want, and I'm you know, like, it's, there are, he had huge crowds two nights in a row for WrestleMania. They have by far the most watched shows that are pro wrestling shows on cable. It didn't take WCW 3 years to beat WWF in the ratings. And AEW's had, you know, a couple of years here to beat WWE in the ratings, and they're not. So, and, you know, I did a cover story in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which is a digital bonus or feature for VIP members on our with our membership. And 2 weeks ago, or actually it was last week, but 2 issues ago, did a cover story, and AEW averaged 1 million live and same-night viewers for Dynamite in quarter one, first time they've ever done that, in quarter one 2022, and it was a big increase over a year ago, but I talk in detail with Rich Mann about this. It's not a very big increase over 2 years ago. You know, so I the spirit of what you're saying is true, but I just am pushing back a little bit on the idea that Vince is somehow tricking people into watching his product. Like, he is giving a product to people that a lot of people like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he's tricking them or anything, but, you know, in the same vein, WWE's ratings have gone down substantially over the past decade from what they used to be, because it wasn't that long ago Raw was averaging like 3 million viewers or 5 million viewers, and now it's basically down to 1.5 to 2 on a good night. And also SmackDown's on a national network like Fox. So I think it would be substantially less if they were on, say, like USA or something like that. And I just...
Yeah, you're right. Not everybody who watches SmackDown actually has the capability to flip over to Rampage. So in the spirit of accuracy, which I think is a good thing, 75% of the people aren't not actually choosing to not watch Rampage. A lot don't know about it because of the head start WWE has, and a lot just don't have cable. Two very fair points.
Yeah, I just can't bring myself to care about WWE anymore for two reasons. One, the Saudi Arabia thing back in after Khashoggi was killed, which was my red line. Like, I can't support a company that does that anymore. And number two, you got a guy who's, 76 going on 77 now, something like that, who's way out of touch with his own company. He treats many of his employees like crap, Tony Storm being a good example, or Mustafa Ali, another example, and he's got a long trail of dead bodies in his wake, too, with, you know, for instance, the idiocy of taking away, and Bret Hart made this point, of the idiocy of taking away marijuana from the wrestlers back in the early 90s, when if he had just allowed that to go, probably a lot of them would still be alive today, not resorting to pills and such things. So,
I've made that point a lot, and it is 4:20, so it's a good day to bring that. Brian, if you were complimenting Vince McMahon or criticizing him, I'd say the same thing. I want to stay a little bit more focused on tonight's Dynamite before I go too far down that road. So, go ahead.
I'm just Vince McMahon's a monster to me, and he always will be. But anyway, I'll move on. I thought the Kyle O'Reilly Jungle Boy match was actually very good. I thought I gave that like a 4 stars out of 5. And I was hoping that, you know, O'Reilly would pick up the win because Red Dragon had lost last week. And he did, and I like to see where they're going to go with him and with Red Dragon. You know,
No, finish your thought, Brian. Sorry.
I know you're not a fan of more title belts, but I think it's pretty inevitable that there's going to be a trios title at some point, maybe when Omega comes back. And I think they're laying the groundwork for that pretty nicely. I mean, I'm kind of ambivalent about the trios title. I don't really care one way or another. It just, you know, if they're going to do it, just build it well. But They're clearly with the Blackpool Combat Club, the Red Dragon, the Bucks, and Kenny. Whenever he comes back, hopefully it'll be soon. But with the amount of injuries he's dealing with, I wouldn't bet on any time till the summer. But you know, there's a lot of Jurassic Express with Christian, unless you know they're going to do that heel turn with Jungle Boy, because it seemed like they were kind of teasing that a little bit. So I think they've got that. I think they've got something good going there.
Well, let's hit a couple things here. First of all, Javier, the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and the Young Bucks. There's a proposed 10-man tag match. in the spirit of Brian being in favor of 6-man titles, as Jim Ross and I call them.
I said I was ambivalent.
Okay. Well. Yes. What would you call, Javier, a 10-man tag team championship? What would the cool club term for that be?
The Deca titles?
No. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis. Like, what is 10 in Spanish?
The décima titles?
Yeah. Probably. So they have to call it that. They have no. It's not. It doesn't have to be a sign. They have to call it a decima tag match.
Or use another language. I'm trying to remember the language that I remember
well,
to count to 10 on.
That doesn't show off your knowledge of Mexican wrestling. You gotta be showing your club card about what a great smart fan you are by introducing that term. And yeah, anyway, there's 6-man tag titles. I'm on Team Ross on this. I'm on Team Ross on most. By the way, Jim Ross has been better lately. Have you noticed that? Like, I don't. Maybe I'm just not on those pockets of social media. But like, we're not getting calls and emails complaining about Jim Ross. I think he's more in a groove. Brian, was your noise was agreeing or disagreeing with that? I heard you respond a little bit.
With the Jim Ross thing.
Yeah. Did you? Yeah. I heard you react to me saying he's. I think he's better lately, and I couldn't tell if you were agreeing or disagreeing with.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've always loved Jim Ross, and one thing I noticed was. Back when he was at the UFC show with Tony Khan, and I just commented on Twitter that it's nice that he's working for a boss that doesn't treat him like crap. So
okay,
fun
all
of
right, all right.
Yes. Yeah.
Javier,
yeah,
what do you think
really
of Rob?
In terms of like him, because I was not enjoying him during Ross during the when he was doing New Japan at all, but he's more engaged with the product now that he's knows everybody and as far as that's concerned is cool. I'm a lot less cool with cantankerous Ross. I think he reared his head during a I think it might have been the Moxley match. It was a Tope Suicida, and he's like, "Did you have that in your bingo cards?" So, I'll be honest, I did chuckle at that one, but so I'm not as, when he really is like cantankerous over a match or over something, particularly when it's like, get these guys out of the ring. I'm like, okay, look, yeah, I agree with you, but please don't underscore it. Just save that for later. He's been doing all that a lot less. So, but yeah, I mean, I think like overall he's been more of a value add than he's been a value, negative.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask
and if people hear my old shows that I did with JR, when we used to do long form interviews pretty regularly, it was like we'd just be like, mutual agreement society, like just yep, I agree with that. I say, oh yep, I agree with that, Wade. Oh yeah, I agree with that, Jim. Like just philosophically, there's so much that we agree. So in that sense, even when Ross is being cantankerous and even counterproductive and shining a hanging a lantern on things that maybe, no one's thinking about until Ross brings it up, or maybe even if they are thinking about it, Ross doesn't need to validate for the sake of, what's best for AEW and differing opinions. It doesn't change the fact that I'm not, usually agreeing with him on that. Not always, but usually. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, where did the term Tope Suicida come from? Because they used to call it suicide dive. Is that what it's called in Spanish, like down in Mexico with the Lucha Libre thing? Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, Tope is dive.
Okay, yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. All right. CM Punk, I'm just wondering if what your guys' thoughts are on CM Punk versus Hangman Page at Double or Nothing, because that's obviously where it's going to take place. And if you think there's going to be a title change there, because I almost think if you want the Wade, you've been saying this a lot. If you want the title, if you want the champion to be like the number one person on the show, and I agree, it should be that way. Putting the belt on Punk would pretty much accomplish that goal. So I'm just wondering if you guys think there's going to be a title change at Double or Nothing when that match does take place.
I think so, and I think they should. They've got the MJF rematch. I think MJF is going to become champion by beating Punk. And I think we should have a summer of Punk. That's my thinking. I like Hangman Page. I think he cut one of the best promos in pro wrestling last year, but the drop off after that is pretty strong. And I just need somebody who's seems a little more hungry and engaged and alpha than he's shown himself to be. There's sort of an aw shucks, show up to work, don't want to draw attention to myself type thing. And I just don't think you can have a world champion who who is like that. I think he's like a super cool, awesome, nice person who is in an era that if he were in another era, he would be eaten alive by hungry, motivated, ambitious wrestlers in the locker room. And there isn't that incentive, you know, to do what it takes to get that big crowd, you know, travel city to city and earn your keep like in the territory days. He just doesn't have that right now. And you know, I think I've had people tell me, you know, he's kind of insecure. You know, he didn't work a lot of indie shows. He didn't get formally trained compared to, you know, he just doesn't have sort of that track record. And it's like weird because he had this great rise before AEW launched where he was, you know, the hot, young, up-and-coming talent, and he earned it in the ring at indie shows and internationally. And yet there's still he still has some insecurities that I think he just feels – he's such a nice guy. He feels like, well, but I'm not as qualified as these people. Like, I think he just still thinks that, and it leaks into his character a little bit. So all that said, he's young, and he's valuable, and he'll be a great star for AEW, but I'm not sure that being world champion is ideal for him, and I think they have so many options. Just move on to someone who you can fill more TV time with than they feel comfortable, you know, with him. They don't just put him out there in the ring and let him fill TV time carrying segments right now. And, you know, CM Punk can do that. And Jeff can do that. And so anyway, Javier, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, and I am a little bit not concerned, but I have questions because he has said that like in promos that he wants to wrestle more, and we're not seeing him like in a lot of like matches on TV. So that kind of feels like that might be a little bit truth into what he's saying.
But he might be better wrestling more, not as world champion, because I don't know if you want world champion wrestling all the time.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like I think that might be like to come to play. You know what I mean? In his how he's feeling. You know, because I mean, you could have him in, you know, involved in more tag team matches and stuff like that with other people. I'm not sure if CM Punk is going to be the one to dethrone him, because in the last bunch of matches that CM Punk has had, he's been selling like different parts of his body falling apart. So I don't know if that is a way out where, you know, if he wrestles. When he wrestles, let me rephrase that, Hangman Page, that it's going to be like a knee thing that takes him out. And I'm thinking that's either like a way out for CM Punk to lose, or a way for CM Punk to win by faking an injury. And then, you know, kind of like in a heelish kind of way, because I think if when the two of them wrestle, I think heels are going to take more of the cantankerous point of view, you know, position, like the, if not full blown heel, more of a, prickly Punk, against Hangman Page. I think that's, so I wouldn't say that he's Punk is like a shoo-in to be the one to beat Hangman Page.
Well, there's always one
right,
MJF
right.
option too.
Can
you
MJF take off of Hangman?
Yeah. That's he's beaten Hangman once before in a match.
I don't think there's like as long of a list of obvious contenders to be the centerpiece AEW champion that, you know, we say there are, but I mean, they've already done Moxley. They've done Jericho. They've done Kenny Omega. And I mean, I don't sense they want to give Keith Lee that. I don't sense Christian is a candidate. I don't think Andrade is. I don't think Aleister Black is. So they've had a bunch of recent signings who aren't. You know, maybe Adam Cole, you know, I at some point Bryan Danielson needs to win it, but it doesn't feel imminent. And so then you kind of look at, well, Miro, I'd be for that. Like on just sort of a personal level, I think he's been one of the best.
Yeah. I'd be down
one of the best overall characters in his matches. You can headline pay-per-views with him. His promos are super entertaining and fantastic. And,
hilarious.
So you could do that, but it's not obvious because, you know, if you're AEW, it's another ex-WWE mid-card, you know, an ex-WWE guy who wasn't even pushed that hard, although he had world title matches and worked against, you know, Cena and Reigns and stuff. But do you want to go that or do you want one of your homegrown guys? And that's where there's value in Hangman being champ. But he wasn't a top guy like Punk was. So anyway, I mean, I don't think the list is obvious, and I just don't think they've gotten that next tier ready. You know, Sammy Guevara, Ricky Starks, Try to think who else, Jungle Boy, Darby, like, you know, we love them. They're reliable. They give you great matches, but they're not, you know, they're not pushed where you think they're on the cusp of credibly challenging for the world titles. So it's just not as long of, and maybe Wardlow, you know, is kind of high up on that list right now as a homegrown guy that Tony's got his eye on, but I think that's a longer story arc. And I don't know that you can headline pay-per-views with Wardlow matches. You know, I think you could end up with Matt Morgan and TNA or early Sting and WCW where it's like, you know, the matches just don't feel main event, even though the guy kind of looked the part relative to the rest of the roster.
Well, bigger doesn't always mean better.
Yeah.
I'll just bring one last quick point, then I'll leave it to you guys because you sound like you want to move on a little bit. So, just got to get my 2 cents in on the women's thing like I usually do. I thought the Baker Carmella match, or it was good for what it was. You know, just kind of a 5-minute squash match, if you will, to kind of get Baker in a nice little promo. I was kind of intrigued by that last part where she kind of went after the Jade Batty section. So my question is, do you guys think that was just like part of her promo in a general sense, or do you think maybe they're positioning Baker to go after Cargill for the TBS title as opposed to Tony Storm? Just interested in your thoughts on that. And thanks a lot, and have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. I'm not saying that Albert Baker talks behind closed doors about her cohorts in the AEW women's division, but I'm not saying it's not either. there's some people going, wait, she said that on TV this time? She's a bit of a handful behind the scenes and has a little bit of a reputation in some circles it's in a way like that's good because it's what Hangman Page, like, you know, would benefit from, like, but there's, like, with everything, there's a bit of a happy medium with some of this stuff. But yeah, I mean, her bearing the rest of the, I think we got an email on this. Let me introduce that if I'm not imagining this. I guess maybe I don't. Maybe it was something I saw on social media. I thought somebody mentioned something about her bearing the roster. Maybe it was Jake Barnett's report over pressing.net. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. Anyway, it was an interesting promo. I she falls in that category of, you know, she's in Pittsburgh, you know, her market, people are cheering for her, but I want a little more clear reason for me to like or dislike somebody and not just be constantly conflicted. And then, you know, kind of go.
You mean
with
her
it.
Promo did not settle it things for you, Ed?
Well, it did. Did it settle it for you, Javier?
No.
Yeah.
Because my reaction when she went into the promo was that she starts calling out, you know, all the baby faces. Okay, so we're settling on heels then. That she's a heel then, and then she starts cutting a promo on Jade. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah.
We're doing this again.
Yeah. Yep. I know. I think, let me see if it was Jake. Oh, yeah, it was. It was Jake Barnett over ProWrestling.net. He said, I'm not sure what Baker thinks she's accomplishing by dragging the entire women's division. This felt like a Triple H promo circa 2004.
Yes, yes.
I did find it funny that she bagged on Thunder Rosa's promos and then delivered a decidedly mediocre one herself. Jake is so good. He's on the show a lot, but Jason Paul is not the only reason that you should be supporting ProWrestling.net. Jake is a top analyst out there.
My brother chimed in earlier because he's watching the show now. He's on delay. He texted me, "Boy, Britt Baker botched the bleep out of her promo."
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that stood out to him. So.
Wow.
About her thing. So.
Yes.
The other thing he mentioned is when did Sting become the new Terry Funk? Was the other thing he said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it, I don't know when it happened, but over the last few years, it has. By the way, Colin McGuire does good work over pressing.net too. I don't want to exclude him either because his editorials over there are good too. Jason's put a good team together. All right, let's see. I definitely want time to get the emails. I want to bring Brian on. We brought Brian on. I want to bring Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland on next. And then jump into some emails because we definitely have some good emails here. Ryan, I don't want to leave you hanging any longer. A couple of people dropped off because we went so long with the first couple of callers. You're still with us. Thank you for that. Usually you bring three things to us. What's your first?
My first question is on the new Japan president. We all know how like Vince McMahon came into power and how Tony Khan came into power. Do you know how this owner or president came into power? Because the only thing I know about him is he went to school in California and has an MBA, but I just don't know how he became such a player in New Japan.
Javier?
If I'm remembering my timeline correctly without actually doing research on this, Harold May, I believe, was the previous one, and things did not go well with him. And so they pulled him out and put in – because they mainly went with Harold May in order to push for, expansion outside of Japan. I know there were issues between him and I believe that that's part of the reason why Omega and the Bucks and the exodus of some of that talent was, you know, part of that, I believe, was the reason for that. And basically talks wouldn't have resumed between AEW if Harold May would have been around is what I believe. Again, I would have to do research because I'm going off the top of my head. I don't know how he specifically ended up getting, but I know why they moved on from the previous regime.
Yeah, that's, sounds right to me, but yeah, I don't know his backstory, Ryan. I can't add to that. What else do you got for us?
My second question is on Hook and this Dan Hansen feud. I heard a rumor that it's maybe the spell that he's putting on him will lead to him switching bodies with his father Taz. Is that possible in the cards?
Javier, remember your thought? If that happens, Taz has to prepare himself for an onslaught of attention that he has never received before from both the straight and gay community. And I don't know if Taz is ready for that.
I pass. Whatever what you just said was way better than anything I was going to say.
By the way, speaking of Hook, I watched him come out tonight, and I did not see a crowd go, like, apeshit nuts for him. Did they wait too long to pull the trigger on bringing him out of Dynamite? Has Hook cooled off? Did they, you know, I mean, I don't know. Was it 6 weeks ago? I don't have a great sense of time. When was Hook first showing up and it was just everyone was going nuts? And it almost feels like they poured a cold bucket on him, like, on purpose politically, because it just feels like the timing really has hurt him. I don't know, Javier, what did you think?
Well, I mean, how far along is he really? That would be my question. Is he far long enough to be able to, you know, stand there with, the top guys that are there? I mean, that would be what I would be my question. Cause, cause I mean, we still haven't seen him really do much. He feels like he feels like Goldberg, just had the couple things that he did and everybody got behind him. So I wouldn't, I wouldn't say they necessarily, poured a cold bucket. It was more that eventually the mystique was going to wear off at some point. And I just don't, not entirely sure where you go from here, because this is a point where he probably should be going somewhere else to further explore the craft, I would say I just get RH up and running as soon as possible and move him all over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Keep him off of the Dynamite and keep him off of Rampage and put him in like someplace like that where he could, explore, and build up more of a reputation outside of that before you, bring him in. I'm assuming, I don't know how ready, like I said, how ready he necessarily is, but I mean, he looks freaking amazing. So.
Yeah. Dave from North Carolina listening live, emailed and, said, one, Sammy was going for heel heat, full stop. He was wearing Becky Lynch tonight. He's parodying Cody at this point, which would be awesome if that's intentional. And then he also said Hook, crowd is going totally for Hook in mid-December to early January. That's when he had the number one selling T-shirt. So yeah, he says it wasn't wise to cool them off so much. But it might be wise to cool them off if what you're saying is true, Javier, which is, you know what? He's just not ready for the popularity that he has right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting that, it's like, so we're in April. So February, March, it was like 3 months ago that Hook was the talk of the wrestling business. Wow. But yeah, Sammy, if Sammy and Ty are like now going to go full blown parroting, although fortunately we never saw Cody and Brandy dunk yet. Oh man. And I, VIP members at near the end of everything, I explain to Rich Fan how he can remember it's not Tay Conti, it's Ty Conti. And I just prepare yourself. Cause I gave Rich, what's the term for when there's a trick to remember, like you're learning Spanish, you know, you have a thing you do that helps you remember. It was sort of like Nia Jax. It's her knees aren't pretty. Her eyes are, it's Nia, not Nia. And it wasn't a dig at her knees. It's not like it was just a compliment to her eyes, but nevertheless, it was a way to try to like help people understand, you know, how to remember how to pronounce her name. I'm agnostic on her knees. Her eyes are beautiful, but your laughter is not helping me dig myself out of this hole that does not exist unless you're laughing and causing me to explain myself more. So anyway, something to look forward to for VIP members who want to hear everything with Rich. Oh my God, I'm so far off track now. What was I even thinking?
I don't know. You're trying to remember something. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Mnemonic device, I think, is what you're looking for.
Oh yeah, 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 something like that. Yeah, but it's not actually mnemonic. It's not that. I mean, you're on the right track, but it's something else. Anyway, Ryan, you are still there. Thank you. Get us back on track. What's your third point?
My third point's on Darby Allin in the casket match. I always understood why the Undertaker had these matches because he's the Undertaker. So is the reason why Darby has these matches is because he's obsessed with dying, like because he does all these stunts, or is there a other reason why he always puts himself in these casket matches?
Yeah, it's a death wish. You know, that's kind of like his thing. He has a death wish because of his past with his uncle. He's mentioned that, you know, half of him is already dead. Fits the motif, the coffin drop being his finisher. Yeah, it's part of the whole shebang, and it's like, you know, it's hard to actually have a coffin match, to have a actual good reason to have a coffin match. Not that this is necessarily a good reason, but or have a character that's their gimmick, and you know, it could be that's his match. So for those reasons.
All right,
cool, Ryan, thanks. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, before we wrap up here, I thought this would be a shorter show. I don't know why. Sometimes I think that, and I'm never right. Anyway, let's go to some emails here. David, no last initial, no city, says they have lightning in a bottle with Hook, but they may squander it if he doesn't cut a good promo soon and beat someone higher up the card. So someone else kind of, you know, just it's like, oh, when you think of where he was and then where he is now. Also, part of why they might be doing Danhausen, and they might explain this if they were willing to, you know, explain why they're doing this, is they can do a gimmicky match with Danhausen, and Hook's not ready to have a full-fledged match. So it might be like, oh, this is beneath Hook, but it actually might be the only thing they can do with him right now because he's still really green. You know, he's still having short matches. He can run the ropes and hit a nice lariat from behind, and he can do some cool submission holds, and he's got, you know, legit, you know, foundation to build on. But that doesn't mean he's ready to believably sell and do all the things that to be a good wrestler, a good pro wrestler. I mean, it really, no matter how quickly you're picking things up in the ring, it takes years to get good at this. Maybe an Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle didn't need years, but it's like, but even being an Olympic gold medalist, it's no guarantee Gable Steveson's going to be good. There sometimes people are really good athletes in some areas and they just, it doesn't click how to sell and take a punch and throw a work punch, you know, in the way that you have to tell the story in a wrestling ring. So, you know, they're very limited in what they show Hook. But yeah, they might have squandered it. But the question is, would it have exposed Hook in a bad way if they quote didn't squander it and put him out there and had him look bad in the, in the meantime. And I think that's almost the best case scenario, is prudence intervened over just trying to capitalize on making some money in the short term.
Yeah, and in terms of cutting a promo, that's not his character. That's not the
no.
character they build. He's the man of mystery. Him speaking is death for the character, no matter how good he is.
He smiled, and I don't think he should have smiled.
Yeah, that was a mistake. I think that was a mistake. After he smiled, he like all of a sudden got serious again, because I think he broke character. He was about to laugh.
Yep.
I don't think it was intended. I think he accidentally just broke character because he found Danhausen hilarious. Who doesn't? I mean, you have no soul, Todd Martin, if you go find Danhausen hilarious. I am so sorry. I'm so sorry, Todd Martin. You're my favorite.
It's like Nia Jax in the knee comment. You're like,
yeah, I know.
Okay. David also says, Tony and the sharp-dressed man from New Japan look like geeks tonight. Why would the production staff that he pays let Cole and White hijack the announcement like that? I expect WWE-style mass releases after that. Thank you, David. I'm with you. I mean, Jay White coming out, I'm fine with a wrestler literally forcing himself physically to interrupt a segment. But the idea that a production crew person would think, oh, I'm going to put Adam Cole on the big screen and interrupt his boss and my boss on a very important announcement, it's just not believable. It's not believable.
Well, I mean, the one thing I would hand them is that he said, I have something I need to do, and they gave him enough time to go torture somebody to say, hey, if you don't do this, I'm going to, take out your family. I don't know, something along those lines. They did, play off of it, so you're going to have to create your own, fill in the blank yourself, but, they left enough wiggle room where, you could imagine something else went on along it would be nice if they say, Adam Cole has been fined because he beat up beat up the producer guy, and forced the producer guy to put him on TV.
Yeah. That's all I'm looking for, is take an extra minute and make it believable.
I mean, there's enough space there for you to fill it in with your own headcanon, so. You're not a fan of that. I know.
the reason that I'm not is if they consistently didn't have things that could not be explained in your headcanon, like the popcorn on the table.
Yeah.
And honestly, Sting in the crowd, like there's just too much of it where they haven't earned the benefit of the doubt in other ways. So, they're good in other ways. Tony said, we're not going to do invisible cameras. We're not going to do coincidence cameras. It drives me nuts on WWE TV that they go live to somebody on their phone texting. And it's like, there's no reason you would film that, except then 2 seconds later, someone interrupts, but it's supposed to be happenstance that happened. But so film the person walking backstage who says, I got something I'm doing, follow me. That's what AEW does. They have people commandeer a camera guy and say, follow me. And that's way better than, there's Rhea Ripley walking down the hallway. Well, this is a weird choice. And then suddenly something happens and someone enters the picture. It's dumb. And there's a better way to do it. So do it the better way. Excalibur, by the way, blew it on the show, because he said, do you remember this, Javier, with the backstage interview?
What exactly?
I'm trying to get specifically to the interview. I'm scrolling through here. Everyone bear with me. I thought it was earlier in the show or later in the show than this. He threw to an interview, and he said it was with two people. It was Scorpio Sky, but who was Scorpio on camera?
Cass.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, sorry for forgetting you, Cass. So he said, we're going to go backstage to an interview. Shivani's got Kaz and Scorpio Sky for an interview. He said that. And then they went live to Shivani in Kaz, and Sky interrupted the interview.
Yeah.
It wasn't planned. It was like when CM Punk said, apparently in 2 weeks I'm going to know who I'm going to be facing for the world title. He said that a week before they announced the world title match between the two people he was talking about. Sting did that on a promo like a month ago. Like, they get their wires crossed. Wrestlers know things, and then they're scripted to acknowledge them before that actually enters the narrative on TV. So everybody, both major companies have their faults in this way, but I'm not going to side with you that I have to create headcanon to explain
Well, when things happen out of order, that's obviously a screw up. I mean, your headcanon would have to say that there was a time vortex and someone went back in time.
Thank you for listening carefully to what I said, and you're correct, Javier. I'm talking about the implausibilities Anyway, all right, so let's go to another email. Alex from Montreal. Despite a few rough spots and a questionable decision or two, I thought this was a really fun show. The Wardlow storyline continues to be pushed forward to perfection. Sting continues to defy time and logic. The BCC continue to create memorable moments, and I'm beyond excited for the potential of the AW New Japan Super Show. All that said, I'd like to talk about something a little more overarching tonight. Recently, Tony Khan said that he's going to make Rampage feel important again. Over the past 3 weeks or so, I feel he succeeded in doing that, and today alone we got promos or video packages for Samoa Joe and Satnam Singh, Eddie Kingston and Daniel Garcia, Jade Cargill hyping up her match with Marina Shafir, and Adam Cole dropping a match announcement for himself and Tomohiro Ishii. This stuff is so incredibly basic, but I feel it is doing wonders to improve the synergy between Dynamite and Rampage. The shows have felt more connected, and I hope they continue with this approach moving forward. As a side note, I also love the Thunder Rosa video package to remind us of her status as AEW Women's Champion. How have you felt about AEW's attempt at adding this connective tissue to their shows lately? Have you noticed it at all, or is it just me? And do you see this approach as sustainable or something Tony will burn himself out with and stop doing a month from now? Thanks for your time, and have a great show. Thank you, Alex. Always good to hear from you, email or call. So I don't think this is new. Like, I think they have been promoting Rampage somewhat consistently. Is that – I'm hedging on – I'm not saying, like, always, but I feel like more often than not, there's been something on Dynamite hyping Rampage. And I just give them a really bad grade for how they handled the Cole title defense against Adam Cole last week. I mean, you can't just have Excalibur speed talk it or have one mention of it. I guess that's, you know, world title. I mean, they're announcing more matches, but I just don't think what AEW needs is more things that they're telling you about that are happening later. I think they need to make something feel really important and drive that home over and over again so that you know it's the most important thing. So it's quantity, it's quality, like of announcement. And for Rampage to feel important, I think what they needed to do is headline this show with not a ring entrance, but with the announcers discussing the major world title match that took place last Friday on Rampage and the outcome of it and the ramifications of that outcome. And they didn't do that. They buried the lead. It got mentioned passively without a video recap with Adam Cole just in, you know, standing around saying, oh, we've all lost lately. Like, that's not – to me – making Rampage important is following up on what happens on Rampage in a way that matches the importance of what should be the importance of what happened. And they didn't do that. So I'm still not there. How about you, Javier?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's like, because Dynamite has been feeding into Rampage a lot. I don't feel like Rampage feeds into Dynamite as much. And I think they kind of need that. And for the most part, I think their weakest is actually when they have the live Rampages. Because when they have a live one, that's the one where it feels like more of a disconnect. Because, you know, when it's not live, it's when, you know, they're just promoting something they're going to be doing later on the show. So it kind of feels like it flows better in that way. And they've been doing that for a while now. But it's the flowing back, because when, you know, you flow back from Rampage to Dynamite, you're now floating over to, you know, the next couple of days. And there are times where they say, oh, this happened last time on Rampage. But you're right that, I mean, you would think that your Texas death match for the title would be something that you would, you know, highlight, you know, particularly since it's the second match. And, you know, feels like it's not important at all.
Tony is so worried because he looks at these minute by minute, studies them, and it's to the detriment of the quality of the product that he does this. He's so worried that as soon as he goes into a recap, people are going to tune out, and you might have evidence that that's the case. I still think it's worth losing a few people. They'll come back. They're just, oh, I already saw this. Okay, they're a hardcore fan. So they're going to go, you know, flip on something else for 2 minutes, and they're going to come back. You know, I saw that in this week's Wrestling Torch Newsletter cover story. I dissected the minute-by-minute numbers for Cody Rhodes since his return to Raw and compared it to how Roman Reigns did and how minute-by-minute a random women's match did and how Ezekiel did. And, like, you can do that, but one trend is the ceiling viewership is the ceiling viewership, and when it drops, those people come back. So if I'm Tony Khan, I just have Excalibur and – like Ross, and just discuss like video clips of that match. and say, hey, you know, last Friday we had this major world title match and headline the show. Go to Ross and Excalibur at ringside. I don't like the every week just doing the live ring entrance. When you had a world title match in between the last two Dynamites, go to the announcers on camera and go, last Friday, a major world title match took place. We are, you know, so many fans are excited. Hangman Page fended off the challenge, the formidable challenge of Adam Cole. And that's when Excalibur can point out that Adam Cole's no slouch, since he likes to say that about people who are losers, losing matches. And then talk about what this means. You know, just discuss, like, Hangman Page is still champion. That means CM Punk has been talking about who he wants to be in the world title picture. He's now looking at Hangman Page. Hangman Page is now looking at Punk. Instead, they just sort of visually told you that with that sort of awkward Hangman's coming out, but we're not sure why. Is he lost? And we have a brief stare down, and then they never mentioned it again. Yeah. And then Adam Cole mentions it in, you know, as sort of a backdrop to something. But fewer than half the people watching Dynamite watch that match, and Cole's referencing it, and the announcers haven't told you what happened, and you haven't gotten a video recap of it. So I just don't agree with the formatting of AEW and the order and the presentation of reinforcing and emphasizing things that I think there's a core 500,000 people who you don't need to cater to, but you got to, like, talk to these other people. They're the ones who are more at risk and limiting your growth.
I mean, did they even mention the match when Hangman Page came out?
I'd have to go back and listen.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they did. I think it was Hangman Page. Is he drunk? Is he lost? Why did he wander on stage? You know, CM Punk and him stare at each other, and now we're and I probably Excalibur talked over that to probably plug Dustin Rhodes. You know, like, and heaven forbid we actually explain why Dust. You know, like, it's when the match began they started talking sort of peripherally about Dustin issuing the challenge to Punk, but like. Cut out 40% of the content on Dynamite and make the 60% you keep mean more. And Jake was writing about this at ProSeek.net too. Like, there's just too much happening. Nothing gets emphasized. Nothing sticks. Everything just, it's silly putty thrown against the wall and then it just falls off. It doesn't stick because then there's other stuff just happening. And like Dustin against Punk is a big, give us the Dustin promo. Plan this 3 weeks ahead so you can have, you know, like a couple promos building up to it. Have Punk talk about what it means to him. Obviously, this was an emotional match based on the post-match interaction between the two, but they didn't tell us the story. They just threw the match out there. Dustin cut a nice promo last Friday on Rampage. 400,000 and change saw that. And now it's a match you're supposed to watch for 20 minutes? Like, how are you going to hold people's interest if you're not pulling them in, pulling everybody watching in? And it's frustrating because the potential is there for the, you know, people who email this show, they're watching, they're going to watch no matter what. That's not the market that I'm kind of saying needs to see this. But I also think even people emailing and calling this show and listening to it would enjoy AEW more if there was less going on and what they did present. They did a better job putting in context and then also reflecting on things that happened more so things sink in. Javier.
Yeah, no, that was my first notes on the CM Punk Dustin Rhodes match is dream match? What am I missing? Because they promoted it as a dream match, and even Dustin, you know, even that's even after watching Dustin's promo when he did the promo for the match, I'm like, okay, you know, this is a dream. It's a dream for Dustin, and it's important for Dustin because, you know, the promo that he cut. But the way they talked about it, it's like this is a match years, you know, however long in the making, and I'm like, you know, I was off WWE for quite a while, pretty much all CM Punk's run. So like, and I know they were on there. I mean, did something go on there, or, you know, why, what's the importance between, you know, that between CM Punk and Dustin? And I'm like, you know, I'm like, well, I mean, it's cool that they're meeting, you know, it's, you know, it just, you know, Dustin obviously only has a handful of matches left in his career. So, and it's cool that he's wrestling CM Punk, and, you know, it's kind of like a neat thing there, as if, you know, like one of Justin, Jushin Thunder Liger versus, you know, Rey Mysterio was going to be, you know, it was like a neat thing, but they promoted like a dream match, yet did nothing to build it as such. So I'm like, or they talked about it as being a dream match, did nothing to promote it. So it's like, what am I missing here? It's just, you know, it's that thing that, you know, you're putting great matches and you know what, I'd rather be complaining about this outside of some of the more fundamental issues WWE has. So these are issues, you know, we're talking about stuff that, man, you could improve to a certain level. I'm assuming that, Because, you know, one of the things I love about Impact is when they start their, and it's almost every episode, they start with like a previously on, and they do it like a trailer and with like cool music, and it really captivates me. Does that just not work in general? Because, I mean, I you know, movies, you know, a lot of TV shows used to start with previously on and, you know, to excite you for what's going on. And I've seen that drop. Is that just something that doesn't catch people's attention anymore?
I think it's. I think it is essential for the health of your product in an ongoing basis that you do that, even if you sacrifice a little bit of viewership to do it. And it's a hard, it's a very difficult choice to make, especially for a young company that's chasing the next big TV deal. If you look at the minute by minutes for Raw, the 3 minute and 6 minute opening video packages, usually it's like two to 4 minutes. Don't do the same numbers that the live promo does in the ring or the first match. They sacrifice viewers in order to emphasize what is most important and make things feel important. It's not a huge drop-off, but those people show up. You know, they do, and WWE's decided it's important to do it, even if they lose, you know, their beginning viewership for 3 minutes is 7% lower than it would be otherwise. David North Carolina, listening to us live, chimed in again and said, every climax needs a lead-out. AW does so many climaxes that cut straight to the credits and never follow up on what we just saw. We literally had a Texas death match, and it was even a fun one, and they didn't mention it. Like, what the F? They even have a name for it in screenwriting. It's called the falling action. So I looked that up, and masterclass.com says, in storytelling, falling action refers to the period after the dramatic confrontation of the climax. This portion of the narrative helps deflate the plot's tension and give the character time to unwind after an emotional scene. When you don't have a falling action, when you don't have falling action in wrestling booking, nothing, ironically, nothing seems important because you move on too quickly to the next thing. And AW moves on too quickly to the next thing on dozens of things all the time. And it makes things retroactively, it makes you feel foolish almost, like for being invested in something that they can't be bothered to talk about once it's over. You in Excalibur plugging what's coming up next week as a champion is celebrating retaining the title, or a champion is or somebody's celebrating winning a big match or winning a title, and they've done this. I made note of it the last few weeks. We've seen this. You need to be talking about what you were just told was really important, although they're not good at telling you it's important. But something important just happened. They should be talking about that longer, not, oh, it's on to the next thing. Hey, don't, please watch us next Wednesday for this. It's like, no, slow down. Take a deep breath. Let the champion celebrate. Talk about what this means to them and to you as a viewer that this outcome happened. Let it sink in. And they just don't. And it hurts them. I really think it hurts them. And it's one of the weakest points of AEW's presentation.
Yeah, the falling action is funny because I just had that discussion with my friend and my brother over. It was a show, I'm not going to mention the show because the show is horrible, and the name of the show. But I was talking about a show because I tried it out, and there's a lot of crude humor, and it's all, you know, and I'm a fan of crude humor, but the thing is that like every scene is trying to outdo the next scene, and every joke is trying to outdo the next joke. So all you're getting is like a pure stream of crude humor, you know, and without any, and I mean, they're cutting from one scene to the next, and you know, and without anything for you to absorb the joke. And I actually, it's hilarious because I described it as how, you know, some of those wrestling matches that are spot fests, where it's just a spot, move on to the next, and no selling. And that's exactly how I described it to my friend, because I'm saying, you know, they hit the joke, but they move on to the next joke without actually selling in between and letting you actually, you know, receive the impact of the joke. And so it stops being funny, and it just becomes just like a steady stream of just, you know, filth, as opposed to it actually, you know, being funny. And it's funny because we just finished discussing that, and I used the wrestling analogy, and now it's the other way around.
That's really funny. Yep. All right. My podcast post producer just messaged going, when are you going to have the show to me? So, all right. So let's speed through a couple more emails here. We had really good emails, and I don't want to shortchange them. John from Tennessee. I'm not sure how to feel about this New Japan AEW Super Show. I'm sure it'll be a great pay-per-view, but I really – and by the way, it is on pay-per-view, if people are wondering that. I'm sure it'll be a great pay-per-view, but I really don't want the next several weeks filled with guys from New Japan. We have barely seen guys like Buddy Matthews, Keith Lee, Swerve on Dynamite since they signed in February. Tony Khan has already had several ROH guys to the show. I personally could not care less about, and I'm sure I'm not alone. Who could possibly care about the Sanjay Dutt, dude? The show seems all over the place since the last pay-per-view, and now the New Japan edition of the show is just going to add fuel to that fire. Do you think adding ROH to New Japan wrestlers could actually turn off some people and cause them to stop watching? Thanks for the great content. Everyone will be VIP. My answer to that is yes. It's just too much too fast. Too much going on. And yeah, I remember when Keith Lee and Swerve and I've already forgotten about the other person. Oh, Buddy Matthews. Yeah, he made an appearance finally again. There's no momentum.
Yeah.
All right. Joe from New York. Jungle Boy showed me he can be more than a gimmick or just a tag team wrestler. Jungle Boy showed he can have a career as a singles wrestler. AW needs to develop talent like Jungle Boy. AW needs to show that they can create their own wrestlers. Fact is, one of the reasons WCW went out of business is because of all their history. In all their history, they only created three top stars, Sting, DDP, and Goldberg. AW just can't sign every WWE talent or New Japan talent. Sooner or later, you need to make your own talent. Or they just need to settle on, you know, six top guys at the expense of 12 others. And I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on the post show. I think it was a post show. Just choose six guys and go, the next 6 months, it's going to be about them. And you can then spend that next 6 months building the foundation for three or four people who are going to move into that top six so that they're ready. And then three or four move out of the top six, and they do what, like, Orton and Riddle are doing, move them into a tag team situation. Although Orton and Riddle, you would say, are top six right now because they've actually done a good job emphasizing the tag division at WWE, ironically, unlike AEW, which is going to be known for that. So, yeah, anyway, I'm editorializing the middle of an email here. Jungle Boy showed me in-ring talent tonight. The fact is he had a good long match and looked good. He showed me he has another level to his skill set. Before this match tonight, I thought he was just a gimmick or at best a tag team wrestler. He showed me something tonight. Your thoughts? I am still not over Jungle Boy's complete lack of judgment in making fun of cauliflower ears on his promo last week. Like, I will never forget that. Like, it was incredibly bad judgment and almost disqualifying of, like, rooting for the guy. Like, how can you – like, those cauliflower ears are earned through wrestling, and it's a badge of honor, and he mocked it. I'm not saying, like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, acknowledge how good he is, but, oh, my God, that was such a lapse in judgment. Anyway, Javier.
Yeah, I'm a bit more forgiving because he's young, and it was like, I need to make fun of something. Let me pick the first thing I see. And it's like, dude, you just should not. Yeah, I do agree with you, because particularly if you're somebody who has a long history of wrestling, you know, of following wrestling and really appreciating on that sort of level. But yeah, it was a mistake. And I'm like, okay, dude, just – I mean –
He's dead to me. He's dead to me.
Yeah, no, seriously. It's like, good God, man.
But here's the thing. I he's not dead to me, and obviously, you know, I'm
you're
not.
Being, yeah, you're over. You're
I,
over.
I'm
yeah.
being dramatic, but I'm doing it in part for a reason, because I do think it's important when you're young to be aware you might not know everything about everything yet, and if you're on live TV, he should know better. Like that, you got to know better than that. So. Yes, hopefully a lesson learned, and hopefully he's ashamed and embarrassed. But yes, we can all move on from it. But I don't want to just let it pass and go, oh, no big deal. I want him to feel shame and embarrassment in context for that lapse in judgment or naivete towards what those stand for. He should feel bad about that. I don't think everyone should just go, oh, he's young, it's no big deal. That's my point. Yeah.
Well, and to correct you, Wade, even when you're old, you should know that you don't know everything about everything.
that's actually very true. 100%. It is very true. All right. Chris Fielder from Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Hey, Wade and guest, do you think the Sammy situation was planned or just another Tony Khan pivot? It's a pivot. Sammy and Ty just blew it. And that is not planned. They were, I need to see an email with a date on it from 6 weeks ago that can't be forged showing me that this was planned before I'd ever believe. That is speaking of youthful and like, I mean, no, that was not planned. Javier.
Yeah, no. I mean, there might have been a contingency plan once their relationship became public, because it's a possibility the crowd would turn, you know, eventually on them, and there might have been a contingency plan, but not like this is what we're going to do.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I know how Tony Khan was with Cody. It was, all right, Cody, go try to fix it. You know, it's not working. You want to try again? Okay. Try again. Oh, God, this isn't working. What are we going to do? He's an EVP. He's got pride. He doesn't want to be healed. But this isn't working. What are we going to do? And then, as Todd Martin has posited, he just lowballed him on the contract and caused him to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I have my reasons for being confident in how the dynamic played out over a number of weeks. I think this is very different. Sammy doesn't have that kind of leverage, and I don't think Sammy cares if he's a face or a heel at all. He just wants to be a star.
A better heel.
What's that?
He's a better heel.
Oh, he's way better as a heel, but he doesn't know that because he's out there. When he was being a babyface, he was climbing ladders and winking at the hard cam before doing high spots and thought that was babyface. So, you know, when we talk about people lacking judgment who are young or old, I mean, wow, his instincts are not good as far as – and just going, you know – after losing the title, which he was saying, it means the world to me. Oh, I don't care about the title. I just want to put on a good match for the fans. It's like, oh, my God. I roll. I don't care if I win or lose. You know, it's like, Jesus, I'm spoiled. Whatever. All right.
That's two pillars you really hate, Wade.
No, I don't. I do not hate. I am.
I'm kidding. I'm obviously kidding.
No, no, I know. I am laughing at Sammy, and I am scolding Jungle Boy. Standing up for wrestlers, actual wrestlers everywhere. But yes, no, not hate, but a little scorn and mockery. All right. All right, we'll close here. Ken B says, simple question. Would less be more when it comes to AEW? That is a theme of this show. and the answer again is yes. I love New Japan. I respect Ring of Honor's legacy. And I enjoy the excitement of the weekly new surprise signings. But the opportunity cost of dedicating so much time to these acts is just getting steeper and steeper. Specifically, incredible core emerging AEW acts like Hangman Page, The Young Bucks, Darby Allin, Ricky Starks, Hook, Britt Baker, Powerhouse Hobbs, Malakai Black, Buddy Murphy, Brody King, Dante Martin, Swerve Strickland, Rey Fénix, Pentagon, LAX, Jungle Boy, Sammy Guevara, Orange Cassidy, and countless others. By the way, Ricky Starks was on the list. Did I say him or skip over? Anyway, and countless others are failing to reach their full potential as stars by coming and going off television and playing second fiddle to the surprises. For example, I look at how over FTR got simply by giving them consistent focus for a few weeks. And I wonder if AEW would have been better off in terms of capturing those second million viewers in trimming their roster and giving more consistent, more focused weekly television time to fewer acts. Can't help but wonder if AEW doesn't start losing talent to WWE when contracts come up simply because they want to be on television more than every third week. Well, I could have read Ken's email at the start of the show and saved us 2 hours, Javier.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
A lot of these talents also could wrestle in the indies and outside. So, you know, they're not just stuck at home like Mustafa Ali. So,
yeah. Okay, I lied. I shouldn't say I lied. I was mistaken. There's one more email I want to get to. JB from Detroit. Along with the need to do a better overall job of explaining who new wrestlers or wrestlers from other promotions are in the context of AEW, I really think AEW needs to do a better job of explaining shift in managers or managers' motives. Today we had Jake Roberts working with MJF for money, but Lance Archer had no interest in the money. Not to mention last – and that was bad acting, by the way, by Archer. Oh, by the way, speaking of bad acting, I need to call out Tony Khan. His reaction to Jay Lethal's music starting was hilarious. That's got to be a gif. Do you remember it, Javier?
Which one, sorry?
When Jay White's music played and Tony Khan jumped up literally in fright and made this like totally bad acting, like, oh my God, whoa, no, he can't be here. It was like, it was.
Was he parodying Vince McMahon?
He wasn't parodying. He was not parodying anyone.
When Theory's music played and he thought it was Austin and he started selling it?
I think it's coincidence. I don't think Tony was mocking Vince McMahon or parodying him. Yeah, I mean, judge for yourself, everybody. But the look on Tony's face, I'm chuckling and smiling as I reminisce. Okay, Lance Archer, like, his acting in this was not good, but it was brief at least. So he said, not to mention the last time we saw Archer, he was also working with Dan Lambert for some reason. We also had two Mark Sterling segments. where he was with Jade Cargill and he was with Tony Nese. He's also been featured with MJF in the past. We've had a ton of confusion with Brandy in the past, as well as with Arn Anderson, and now Tully Blanchard is essentially in limbo. Another issue I have with AEW is with Hook and Danhausen. Hook is over the crowd because of his serious no-nonsense and physical nature, while Danhausen, who hasn't been adequately explained, is a glorified comedy character. I worry that the silly nature of this feud, based around Danhausen attempting to curse Hook, might drag Hook's appeal down. On a potentially positive note, however, if this angle does somehow get over, I could see a decent odd couple tag team with Hook and Danhausen, perhaps called Hookhausen, where Hook is the serious straight man and Danhausen is the goof. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I could actually see that.
Yeah. And that's one way to protect Hook.
And then they can go against John Silver and Marco Stunt. No. All right. Also, is it in Sammy's contract at least 85% of his matches have to be ladder matches and or involving the TNT title? I'm assuming the Hardys' appearance after the Coffin match means we might be getting Sting and Darby against the Hardys at Double or Nothing. Yeah, we didn't even talk about the Hardys' appearance at the end.
Well, the Hardys appeared at the end?
Yes, they did. They came out at the very end of the show and did the delete sign as Sting and Darby were standing in the ring.
Jesus Christ.
I love it.
You're not kidding me. That's really happened?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. I had a couple more things to say, but I think I put the nail on the coffin.
Nicely played. Now that you know, Javier, what do you think?
That's interesting. I do want to circle around.
That is one of the two and a half things they want you to know about the show. You didn't even notice.
Like, God damn, man. I did want to circle the ladder match because JR mentioned that was one of the I did complain earlier about Cantankerous JR, but I think he was on point with a few things today because he's like, wow, that escalated quickly.
Yeah,
the ladder match.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they talked about, I'll take your match if you take the mixed tag match.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, well, all right. It didn't seem like they had ever asked for it, but okay. So they agree to that. And he goes, okay, well, I'll see you for a ladder match. I'm like, well, did we skip a few chapters? What the hell just happened?
Yes,
and then,
yeah.
You know, JR was like, that escalated quickly. I'm like, yeah, so I do agree. I think he does have it on in his contract that every other match he has to be a ladder match.
Yeah. All right. My podcast producer will not
kill you.
Be happy. Yeah. This is an hour 15, and now it's 2 hours 15 and change. So, let's wrap up. Javier, tell people anything you want about your work for The Torch and how they can follow you on social media.
I write the primers for WWE, AEW, and occasionally Impact, now that I finally caught up to them, or about to catch up to them, so I can't promise that I'll have it done this week, but going forward, and I do the New Japan Pride podcast. It's been on hiatus.
Do you?
It's been on hiatus.
We need to have a meeting.
Catch up on it. But I will be doing it once. If I haven't gotten to it by then, I will be doing it for the G1 because I do want to cover everything going on in the G1, likely starting with the Super Show, most likely, by then. Follow me at J Machado LK, at J Machado LK, I think. And I don't tweet anything out, so I'm easy to follow. And what else? You can check out, I was on Wrestling Night in America. Didn't pause there.
Good job.
With Greg, which was actually on Saturday this time because Easter was on Sunday. And we covered everything else about AEW that we didn't cover here today, the major storylines stuff going on. So.
Cool. Excellent. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PWTorch. Visit PWTorch.com. Give us 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts, please. Yes, please. And send any feedback on the show to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with our live post shows, plus best of shows throughout the week. And, of course, subscribe to the Blue Brand. Search Wade Keller to get both shows. And search PW Torch to get the PW Torch Daily Cast, a different show every day of the week, a different theme every day of the week with different hosts. It is inexcusable not to enter PW Torch on your podcast app right now and subscribe because there's some really good shows. Some not so good, but some really good shows on the weekly lineup. Javier, did you hear that? You didn't react.
No, I didn't, because I was thinking about asking you to edit out the stuff I said about Todd, because I don't want him.
All right, very good. All right, well, on that note, we will wrap up. I feel like that's a good place to end. Thank you, Javier. Thanks to our callers and emailers. And give us a call next time if you're listening to us on delay. You are invited to join the caller list. Until next time, Wade Keller on behalf of Javier, signing off.